4, 3, 2, 1. Dude, I didn't even get a picture of you. I got to get a picture. Would you go with the blowtorch or the samurai sword in front of the flag? What do you think?
I don't know. What does everybody else do?
They mix it up. Some folks go blowtorch. It's that Elon Musk blowtorch.
I'm going Elon Musk.
That's a good move.
Yeah. I like that. You know, why would I want to be like Elon Musk? You know what I'm saying? That's,
I don't want to be that smart.
Why not?
I think that's bad for you.
No.
When I was talking to him, and you know, like one of there was a moment where I said, like, what's it like being you? And he's like, it's not easy. Like he was like talking about like the thoughts that are bouncing around in his head. I think his head is like a runaway train. Like his brain's just constantly going.
Well, yeah, I mean, but to be that smart, man, you can come up with anything. You can make anything to make things work for you in life.
Well, that is true, I guess. I guess. I don't know, man. I want a little peace and quiet. I like being kind of dumb.
Do you really? Because ignorance is bliss.
You can just kick back and relax sometimes, you know? Sometimes I just like to come home, put the headphones on, just lay back on the couch and listen to music. Just listen to some music. I don't want to think about having to fix the environment.
Yeah. I mean, I see that too. I mean, I'm the same way. I'm an introvert, so like, don't get me twisted.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have never thought that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I can play the role though. You know, I can play the role. I mean, that's all a part of like life.
Well, I think you're both. Cause like, you're really good at being friendly and like, you're a fun guy. Like you have extrovert qualities.
Well, you need those to survive in life.
But is that what it is? Like, you prefer to be introverted?
Yeah, I prefer to be introverted. Like, really? I love my alone, quiet time where I just sit back and chill.
But you seem to love being out and being around people, too.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. I love that, too.
Yeah, you love that, too.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's kind of weird.
But it's good. That's a balance.
Yeah.
That's a healthy thing.
Well, because, you know, in order to survive in life, you have to be out there.
Right.
Like, because you ain't gonna make money sitting at home listening to music.
That's true.
So you got to get out there.
Right.
And showcase.
Yeah, so but I you enjoy it. But you enjoy it, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, I want to enjoy everything I do.
Well, you're really good on Dana White's Looking for a Fight.
Oh, you think so?
You're very good at that. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know if anybody even watched that.
I watch it.
Do you really?
Yeah, you're fun on it. Yeah, it looks like it's a good time.
Yeah.
Silly.
Well, you know, me and Matt, we have a good time.
I love Matt.
Dana, too, but, like, you know, me and Matt really have a good time.
Yeah, Matt's hilarious. And him and Ray Longo should have their own reality show.
I know. 100%. Everybody was saying that for years. Like, Matt and Ray are, like, the best duo ever.
When they're in the corner, there absolutely should be one camera that's on them all the time,
right?
I know Fight Pass has that, right? They have the option to go to the corners. You can listen to the corners.
Do you?
Yeah. Fight Pass has some pretty cool audio options. But like with Ray Longo and Matt Serra, that's a plus. Like,
oh, I know. I love hanging out with them. Like, they're so fun.
They're so Long Island.
Yeah, I know. So long. I mean, the epitome of Long Island. I'm going up there. I'm going to go up there next week and hang out with them, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to find time. Because I'm going up for Brooklyn. So I'm going to find time.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Who do you have on that card?
Greg Hardy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'm always nervous when I say that.
I know.
Yeah. Because everybody's already cast judgment on him.
For people who don't know the story, explain the story. Like, he was an NFL player. And yeah. Then
he was a very high profile.
Yeah.
High profile NFL player.
And something happened with domestic violence.
Yeah. He had allegedly, you know, beaten up this girl and, you know, did some horrific things to her. And,
right.
But somehow he never was convicted of it, and the case was thrown out.
What do you? Does he talk about it?
No. And that's the thing, is that we don't talk about it because I'm sure that's something he wants to forget about in his life. So right. I'm not going to be the one to bring it up to him.
Right.
And I just know the experiences I've had with him have all been positive.
Yeah, it's hard, right? Like, you're not a girl, you're not alone with him, you don't know what happened.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I wasn't there. So, and I don't know how he is around, you know, with his girls.
Yeah.
And but I just know how he is with us and how he is with me.
It's fucking hard, right? And it's also hard because you don't know what really happened. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe something happened, maybe nothing happened, maybe a lot happened, you know, maybe it's exaggerated, maybe it wasn't exaggerated at all. Maybe he lost his fucking mind.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just, you know, the other thing is, this is something that people don't like to discuss, but fucking TBI, man. Traumatic brain injury causes people to do terrible things. That's just a fact. That's just a fact.
Yeah, yeah,
they,
no doubt.
They don't even know why they're doing it. And they do wild, violent, impulsive shit. I mean, we see it with fighters. We see it with football players. I don't know what's worse for you, but I feel like football's worse.
Oh, man, them guys head-to-head all day long. It's way worse. Way worse. Even boxing is worse than MMA.
I think football's worse, too, because of the kind of impacts when dudes are running at each other.
You get
two
full speed
super athletes, you know, 250-pound men fucking sprinting.
Boom!
Some of those collisions, you watch them and just your whole body aches just looking at it.
Like, but they have to do that. Like, that's what the whole thing is predicated on.
Yeah.
Like, MMA, like, for me, I'm always like, listen, if you get hit twice, you need to grab.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just a fist swinging.
Right.
Not a whole body, just, like you said, 250 pounds, just.
Yeah, even, like, the hardest kick. I guess if you get, like, neck kicked, if somebody roundhouse kicks you in the neck, I mean, that's probably as bad as
anything
in life.
Yeah, that's as bad as you get,
But, like, or, like, wheel kicked, like when Edson Barboza wheel kicks people.
Yeah, 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 when he did Terry Adam.
Jesus Bow! Christ.
Yeah, yeah, wheel kicks, because that's, like, full rotation of your body weight into that one kick onto your neck. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Dude, his fight with Dan Hooker, holy shit.
Yeah.
First of all, holy shit, is Hooker tough. Because that guy tried to keep going, but his body was just, his organs must have just been annihilated.
Yeah, because Barboza don't play.
No.
He trained with us now, too.
Does he?
Yeah, he trained the top team now.
Oh, that's right. He went to Florida, right?
Yeah, he came to Florida.
Why did he decide to move to Florida? His Muay Thai coach was in Florida?
Yeah, well, because
he was with Mark Henry, right?
Yeah, he was with Mark Henry, but his Muay Thai coach is the guy who brought him, who taught him everything from a kid.
Yeah.
And I know we reached out to his Muay Thai coach to come down and work with our team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because I think he was in Brazil or whatever. So he came with our team. And then Edson just followed him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that bond.
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you, man, he looks fucking good.
I know. I mean, he's an amazing athlete.
He's so fast. His switch kick is probably the fastest I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I don't think
I've
ever seen anybody throw a switch kick that fast.
Yeah.
I remember watching a switch kick, and I was like, it's like someone took a frame out of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a Bruce Lee move.
Pow! 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 And not only that, but he does, like, he's got a pretty high level of intelligence in terms of fighting.
Mm.
Like, he makes that stuff work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I look at this, like, because I've worked with Mark DeCasey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Physically, I mean, just God-given abilities.
Yeah,
but he just doesn't have the intelligence to, like, make all that shit work.
He's screaming out at the TV right now. You motherfucker!
I know. And I say that. and I say that with all due respect, because he's my man.
Young guy, though? Yeah. Isn't he a young guy?
Who, Mark?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, I mean, early to mid-20s.
Yeah, maybe just trying to figure it out.
Yeah, and that's what it is. He's trying to figure it out, and it kind of pushed him a little fast, so he didn't have a lot of time to make all that
Edson's
shit work.
Edson's had some ups and downs.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, the cowboy fight was a big down. I mean, he's had the Khabib fight. That was a big down.
Oh, yeah.
That was a terrifying fight. That was when you realize how goddamn good Khabib is.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that was like, that's the fight that, like, put Khabib on the map, really, for everybody to say, man, who's going to beat this guy?
Yeah.
What he did to him. Who's going to beat this guy?
Yeah, but that's what I've always said, is that, like, if you had to pick, like, one thing that you're good at, like, what's the most important thing? It seems to me to be wrestling, because the wrestlers can just, if you get a real high-level wrestler, they just dictate what happens. They dictate where the fight takes place. I don't think there is, I mean, you have to know how to strike. You have to know the other things as well, but I feel like if you have a pyramid of shit that's important, I feel like at the bottom is wrestling. And that motherfucker wrestles better than anybody in that division.
Yeah, I mean, but see, I disagree, kind of.
Okay.
And here's why. I don't necessarily, because when we talk about wrestling, I don't think it's necessarily the techniques of wrestling. I think it's just the way they're brought up. They're brought up different.
In Dagestan.
Not only Dagestan. They're definitely brought up differently, but, like, any wrestler is just brought up different.
Oh, toughness. Yes.
A different level of toughness, a different level of competitiveness. So, like, when you go to jiu-jitsu school, the first thing you learn how to do is bow the mat and kiss the instructor's ass. That's it. You know, you bow the mat, and then you're learning self-defense, and you're learning respect. And wrestling, it's not about that.
Right.
It's about dominating. It's about winning and dominating. So they have years of experience of doing that, like, just that mindset.
It's also about being uncomfortable all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, yeah, they're just, the room is always rough. It's always tough. Like, you go to a jiu-jitsu school, it's a bunch of dudes smoking pot, laying back. They roll 5 minutes, sit back, smoke for 30, roll another 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You go to a wrestling room, it's hot, sweaty. They're all uncomfortable. They're all grinding. So you take that guy and you teach him some basic jiu-jitsu, you got a champ.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just the mindset for me.
Physical strength, too.
Yeah, and they got physical strength, the grip strength. Like, that's so important. Like, for me, like, grips is everything. Mm-hmm. And in wrestling, you learn a lot of that early.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's kind of the difference. They're just brought up different.
Yeah, I definitely think there's something to that. And then also being able to cut weight and still compete.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm always telling my fighters now, like, when you have that wrestling experience, especially if you wrestled in college, like, you go all your high school years, you got 50 matches a year.
Mm-hmm.
So you competing 200 times before you even graduate high school. And then you go to college. If you wrestle in college, you competing against the best of the best in the best room. And then you fight MMA, it's nothing.
Mm.
It's nothing to you. And now you take a kid off the street who's never competed before. They're nervous. They don't perform well. They're always at a disadvantage against somebody who wrestled.
Right, because of the experience in competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. The only thing about some wrestlers, because of the like, there's like a tightness to wrestling, and some wrestlers just never learn how to be loose with
striking.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And some pick it up quick. It's weird.
Well, that's the difference, and that's what makes some of them better than the other ones.
Yeah.
When I look at, you know, obviously Tyron Woodley,
yeah,
he's got it.
Yeah,
he's loose. Got it. He's got it.
Yeah.
Even Michael Chandler, when he throws his right hand, it's loose. Yeah.
It's a piston.
Yeah. But you're right. Some of them just can't get it, and that's why they struggle.
Yeah, and they struggle if they fight a wrestler who can strike. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
For a wrestler who can't strike, to fight a wrestler who can strike is terrifying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Some dude who can keep it standing and can fuck you up, especially if they can kick, too.
I know. I know. But I think that's another problem with wrestlers. They fall in love with the striking early.
Yes. Jiu-jitsu guys too.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what messes them up, man. Mm-hmm. They fall in love with it and think, "Oh, I have to be well-rounded, so I have to dedicate all my time to doing this." And I'm like, "Man, but you're getting worse at what you're good at."
Well, I used to watch George Gurgel fight. I'm like, "If you watch that guy fight, you'd never know that he was a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. He just comes to bang."
I used to get so mad at him. I'm like, "Dude, what are you doing? What are you doing?" Like, I don't know if it was like fan expectation or just like in his mind he wanted to be a striker, but I'd be like, "Dude, what are you doing?"
I think he liked it too. I think there's something to that too. Something that they like. I don't know. It gets weird when they have that new tool.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But it's ruined a lot of good fighters' careers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at like Johnny Hendricks.
Yep.
Or Josh Koscheck. He fell in love with that right hand. Mm-hmm. Hendricks fell in love with that left hand. And then when it caught up to him,
Hendricks is an interesting case because something switched off. Something changed with that guy. Like, that guy used to knock everybody dead, and then it just stopped happening. Like, you watch his Martin Campman fight. Martin Campman went flying like he had the death touch.
Yeah, yeah.
John Fitch went flying like the death touch.
Yeah.
Like, he was smashing.
I mean, he caught him early.
Boom!
Boom, yeah.
They were flying.
Yeah.
Like, if he touched you, you were getting fucked up. Like, something happened. And then all of a sudden, everybody's surviving.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Honestly, I'd have to look back and watch. But I don't really know, man. He started throwing a lot of leg kicks and just, like, taking a little bit of steam off his shots, off his punches. I don't really know.
It could be injuries. Like, sometimes you see a guy, as they get older or they get injured, they don't throw the punch the same way anymore. It's almost like they can't throw it straight. It's like they're kind of
their
shoulders are fucked up or something.
Their mechanics are off.
Yeah, their mechanics change. You see that with Arlovski. When Arlovski was young, dude, his right hand was a fucking piston.
He was great, wasn't he?
Yeah, have you ever watched his fight with Paul Buentello?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen that, but
it's like the perfect example of an Arlovski knockout. He KO'd Paul Buentello with his straight right hand. It was just blop. It just came off the shoulder. Blop. And it doesn't come off the shoulder anymore. Now it's like it comes up almost.
Yeah.
It's like he doesn't throw it straight anymore. It doesn't seem the same when he throws it.
Well, I see him in the gym all the time. He trained with us too, so I see him in the gym all the time. And I mean, obviously it's kind of sad because you see him, it's like you remember how great he was.
Yeah.
And now, like, with age and injuries,
yeah,
you know, he's just trying to get through a workout.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock on him. It's just what happens when you get older.
He's 40.
Yeah, yeah, you know? You're 40 years old, so like your workouts are different.
Well, it's also he's 40 years old with 15 plus years of world-class combat experience.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at some of the knockouts that he suffered against, like, Sergey Karatanov, against Francis Ngannou. I mean, he suffered some brutal fucking knockouts.
Oh, I know. I mean, but just the fact
that... Here's Arlovsky. This is... this is like... I want to say this is like UFC fucking 37 or some shit. Boom! Look at that.
Oh, yeah. That was straight down the pipe.
Yeah. Show that again real quick. Look at this. Boom! I mean... just the timing, the precision. He was a fucking savage back then.
Yeah, that was, yeah. You couldn't really do it better than that. Yeah.
Him.
Yeah.
He was the scariest fucking heavyweight on the planet for a while.
I mean, and he had a, you know, you got to respect his career because he's done a lot.
And he's still good.
Yeah, yeah. And he's still good.
He's still competitive. Yeah, he's still competitive. Yeah. I mean, he loves to fight. He still fights with enthusiasm.
Yeah.
He just can't get his body to do what it used to do.
Yeah, in the gym, like, it took him a while for him to kind of lighten up a bit. I remember he'd come in the gym, he's got that Russian, that scary Russian look to him, and he'd come in the gym and wouldn't say nothing to nobody. But now he smiles.
Well, that's cool. Smiles.
It's hard to get these guys to smile sometimes.
So is he down in Florida now?
Yeah, he's down in Florida.
When did he start going down there? It's been like two fights, right?
Yeah, maybe a little more than that. He works a lot with Mike Brown.
Yeah.
And they've been working together for maybe 2 years, maybe.
So he was at Jackson's for quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then he just decided to just keep moving, huh?
Yeah.
That's the life of a fucking rambling fighter. Moving different towns and trying to assimilate.
Man, it's so hard.
Single, no kids.
Yep. But you know what? A lot of them, what they end up doing is they're getting girls and like they end up shacking up with a girl because it's easier for them.
In what way?
Like, when you're a struggling fighter, you got nothing, hardly nowhere to live, you find a girl, and you shack up with her, and she pay all your bills.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what a lot of fighters end up doing. That's why you see them end up, like, with their girl and they're young.
Paying the bills. That's never a good relationship.
No.
Girls paying the bills?
No.
Oof.
No. Especially when you're a fighter, and then you lose a fight. Mm-hmm. She looking at you like, this motherfucker.
Get a job.
Yeah.
You got brain damage.
Yeah, get a job. Get a job.
You got brain damage. Get a job while you still can.
Yeah.
It's a weird road when you don't think that you could win the title, right? Like every fighter wants to think that they can one day be like a title holder or be one of the elite of the elite.
Yeah,
like you're in the hunt.
It starts out like that.
Yeah.
It don't always end up like that, though.
Yeah, but that's the weird world is the world of the journeyman. Like when Arturo Gatti used to fight Mickey Ward, and everybody knew that these guys were not going to win any titles. But you still wanted to see them beat the fuck out of each other. Still wanted to see them go to war.
Well, I mean, but that's where we got to kind of draw that line between like sport and event, right?
Yeah.
You know, because like when we... And fighters have to also be real with themselves, too, is are you doing this for the sport? You trying to be the champ? Or are you just trying to be a fan favorite?
Right.
And you should train the way you want to, on what you want to project to the world. And a lot of fighters don't do that.
Right, but if you're trying to be a fan favorite, like if you're a guy who just wants to bang it out, like how many of those you got in you?
It's not many. But some, you know, like, you know, Donald Cerrone, you know, that's his road now.
Yeah, in a way, but I think Donald still thinks he can win a title.
That's tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough for him.
Well, they were trying to get him. He was trying to get the Conor McGregor fight.
That would have been a tough fight for him.
It would have been a tough fight for him, but at 155 pounds, it's not a bad fight for him.
No, not really.
I think that's a good fight for him.
The problem is, stylistically, he don't move his head enough.
Yeah.
You know, and Nate doesn't either, but Nate took a lot of shots, you know, to the head. So, I mean, it's kind of a bad, I don't know.
Yeah, but Nate is a very good boxer.
Yeah, Nate can box.
Yeah. Nate Diaz is, it frustrates the shit out of me that he's not fighting.
Why is that?
Because I like to see him. I want to see him get in there. I want to see him make money while he can, too. I mean, you're only going to be able to live this lifestyle. I know he made a couple $1 million off of the Conor fight. But he hasn't fought in 2 years. More than that.
He ain't doing nothing else.
But the Dustin Poirier fight, that was going to happen. But then Poirier got injured. He's got some hip issue. And then he pulled out of that fight. I was looking forward to that fight. I want to see him back in it.
Yeah, but I mean, I would have loved to have seen that fight.
And then Nick was supposed to fight Masvidal.
That's not going to happen?
No.
Why?
I don't know.
That's the perfect fight.
It's a great fight.
I mean, that's the fight where you could have got, like, the Hispanic culture, the Civil War, and Española going at it.
Yeah. That would have been a great stylistic
fight,
too.
Yeah, and, like, they would have talked trash to each other. Fuck, that would have been... Oh. Yeah.
Crazy.
Whoever dropped the ball on that needs to be fired.
I think Nick just decided not fight. I don't know. I do not know. I don't know. I'm talking out of my ass. I don't know the specifics, but I was looking forward to it. But then I saw an article that said Nick Diaz confirms he's not going to be fighting at UFC 235. I'm like, what? What? Get in there. Come on, man. Last time he fought was Anderson Silva. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
That's crazy.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't know, Joe, and this is something that we kind of stopped doing, man. Like, maybe they ain't got it no more.
Well, I don't know if he doesn't have it anymore because we haven't seen him not have it. He fought well against Anderson, and Anderson's a 185-pounder.
Yeah.
Remember when he laid down?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if anybody could still fight in their old age, the way the Diaz brothers fight, their style will allow them to fight longer.
Yeah.
Because they're not, like, the best athletes. So they rely on skill and just
endurance.
Endurance. So they can fight longer. So I'm assuming that they still have something left in the tank.
I'm sure. I mean, they're obviously not out of shape. They're both thin.
Yeah.
They look like they're fit. I see them training. I see, you know, pictures of them with jiu-jitsu gis on and hitting the bag and shit. It's, you know, who knows, man? I mean, it's also like they want that big payday. You know, especially now, and they should get that big payday. But goddamn, if I was the UFC,
you pay them?
Fuck yeah! I think those guys are superstars. I think the UFC doesn't know. I think one of the reasons why Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor was so big is because people love Nate Diaz too.
Conor
McGregor.
No doubt.
If Conor McGregor, no disrespect to Eddie Alvarez, but when Conor McGregor fought Eddie Alvarez, the vast majority of the eyes were on Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
When Conor McGregor fights Nate Diaz, you're looking at a lot of people who love Nate Diaz.
Yeah. But how do you think that happened? Like, how do you think Nate got that star power? You think it's like his attitude?
He legitimately doesn't give a fuck. He smokes weed all the time. People love it. They love the fact that those guys are like that.
I know, man, but what does that say about our fan base and our society?
Well, I don't know. You know what? Here's what's disappointing to me. That for whatever reason, Mighty Mouse never became a giant superstar.
Yeah.
That confused the shit out of me. I'd watch that guy fight. You know, when he took Ray Borg and suplexed him and caught him with an armbar on the way down, I was like, what the fuck does this guy have to do to become a superstar? I mean, his skill level's off the chart.
For sure.
He doesn't get hit.
For sure.
He's a dazzling fighter. Puts on shows. Yeah,
skill for skill, there's nobody on the planet who can do what he does.
No, he's the best ever. He's the best physically ever.
Yeah.
When the only thing that keeps him from being thought of as universally the greatest of all time is John Jones. And John Jones has been able to beat better guys. Like, John Jones fights a better caliber of competition because the 205-pound weight class, at least at one point in time, had a deeper talent pool.
Yeah, but do you think it was... I mean, I'm going to agree with you there, but I will say this. I think that sometimes we confuse popularity with actual talent.
Well, I say yes and no, because if you think about, like, Daniel Cormier twice beat Rumble.
Yeah, for sure.
Rumble's the scariest,
scariest knockout
artist in the history of that division.
No kidding.
Nobody murks people like Rumble.
No kidding.
Fuck, that guy hits hard. Yeah,
I know.
Jesus Christ.
He's one of the scariest dudes. Like, I would not want to piss him off. I wouldn't want to piss him off. Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, I see him in Florida every once in a while. I'm always like, hello. Hey, yeah. Hey, how are you doing, buddy?
Hello, friend.
Yeah. You good? Can I get you anything?
Let's stay tight.
Yeah. That's a scary motherfucker.
Rumble beat him twice. Think about that. And think of what he did to Gustafson. Think of what he does to everybody.
Yeah,
what he did.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck, man. What he did to Little Nog. Like, he just smashes people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, John Jones. John Jones would beat a better caliber, guys.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
And he did it easily.
I was really looking forward to that fight. John Jones versus Rumble. I was looking forward to that fight. I wish that fight took place. But for whatever reason, Rumble couldn't beat the best of the best. You know, it's unfortunate.
You know, I think, I mean, he wrestled too. So I don't really know what his performance anxiety was based on. But he had it.
But you know what he said?
For some reason.
He said after he retired, you know, in the fight with when he lost to DC, he goes, I'm just good at this. He goes, I'm not really a fighter. He's like, I'm an athlete. He goes, I'm just real good at this.
Yeah.
I'm like, how the fuck are you not a fighter? You smash people. I mean, he's a terrifying fighter, but that's not his thing.
Well, that's the thing, Joe, and I gotta tell you, because when I'm coaching guys, I have to identify that early in what I'm working with. Are you a fighter? You an athlete?
Right.
You a competitor? Or are you an artist?
Right.
I put them in them four categories.
Ooh.
And they have to be trained all differently.
How do you train an artist?
Like an artist, you got to let them get creative.
Like, give me an example of an artist.
Like as a fighter?
Yeah.
I look at somebody like, prime example, we just saw him, Ryan Hall.
Yes.
Ryan Hall's an artist. Like, yeah. What he did, that was like art. That's poetry, what he did to BJ.
Yeah.
And the fight world ain't really ready for that yet.
You don't think so?
No. Well, it's getting there, but they're not ready for that yet. Because when you saw when he fought Gray Maynard, he's trying to perform his art. Gray Maynard wouldn't let him. So who do we blame? We blame the artist. Everybody said, oh, man, Ryan Hall, get him out of here. He's a pussy. He can't fight.
Well, you had to fight the smart way.
For sure.
Gray Maynard hits hard.
For sure. So he fought him. He dove for his legs 15 minutes. But when it works, we can appreciate the art.
Yeah. Well, just Gray Maynard was prepared, and he shrugged him off. Here's an example of an artist. Stylebender.
Stylebender. Artist. Pure artist. Yep. Yeah. Anderson Silva. Artist. Like, these guys are artists, and they can't. You can't train them the same way you train, like, a fighter or an athlete.
Animal.
Yeah, you can't train them like
Mike Perry's an animal.
Yeah, Mike Perry. And I know Mike Perry since the first day he walked into a gym.
Mm.
And he's always had, like, this edge on him and this chip on his shoulder. I didn't think he'd make it this far, to be honest with you.
Really?
I thought he'd be in jail. I swear to God.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What made you think that?
Just that he had a little chip on his shoulder. He was always getting in trouble, getting arrested, getting in trouble. But I'm proud of him, man. Like, he really turned it around, and, you know, he's got a good head on his shoulders.
Well, he's still in the hunt.
Yeah.
I mean, he can recover from the Cowboy fight. He's, you know, he's got some holes in his game, you know, but he could shore those up.
But he's got the one thing that you need in order to cover up holes, and that's power.
Savage.
Yeah, that's power. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, even though he got holes, he got power.
Not just power, he takes it well.
Yeah.
He's got a great chin.
Yeah, he's got a great chin.
And he's tough as shit.
Tough.
Like, his mind.
Like, he's an absolute fighter. Yeah. Absolute. So he's the type of guy, you just, hey man, get on that heavy bag for 30 minutes and I'll throw you some raw meat. Go fight. Yeah, that's how you train him, you know what I'm saying? You just let him go.
Right. But don't you, like, it seems like what they've done at Jackson's, though, is made him more calculated, made him more technical. Like, if you see some of his more recent fights before the Cowboy fight, he's fighting a more calculated style. I like the way he looks better.
Yeah, I mean, that works, but the problem is sometimes it takes time to develop.
Mm.
And that's okay. Like, Mike Perry still has time, so that's okay. But the thing is, you don't want to calculate his offense too much. Calculate his defense, make him more aware.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it comes to offense, man, just punch a motherfucker in the face. Just punch him in the fucking face. That's it.
Right.
So, but defensively, you keep him aware and calculated.
It's like his attitude, you just want to, like, keep it the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is that, like, some coaches, and I'm not blaming nobody over there, but you just have to make sure you communicate with them that, look, I don't want to change the way you think.
Right.
I just want to make you more aware. You're going to be a better fighter if you don't just run out there swinging wildly. We need something to do before you can swing wildly.
What was it like for you to transition from being a fighter to being a coach? Was it a seamless process, or were there some hiccups along the way?
No, it wasn't a seamless process. I mean, it was seamless as it could be. It was no hiccups.
Really?
Because I can identify and I can relate to Rumble because I wasn't a fighter neither.
Really?
Yeah. I always thought I was an artist.
Mm.
So when it was time for me to transition, I said, I no longer want to express myself by punching people. I'm going to show people how to do it.
Hmm. Do you like taking people that are already good and making them better, or do you like taking people that don't know shit?
I like taking people that don't know shit.
Really?
Yeah. I like taking people that don't know shit. Because, like, if you already good, so, I mean, that's hard because, like, if they're already good and then you, like, you win a world title with them.
Right.
That's them. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no real.
Let me ask you a guy. Let me take a guy like this. Okay. What would you do with Gustafson?
Gustafson.
Yeah. Because Gustafson, that weird spot, right? Can't beat DC. Can't beat John. Fucks up Glover Teixeira.
Yeah.
Looks like a world beater when he beats Jimmy Manoa. I mean, he's got world-class talent for sure, but it seems like it's just shy of world championship caliber.
See, but that's something that he might have to like go soul searching for, because he might not have it. You know, so if he don't have it, so then you just start going, you know what, I need to get feisty to make a bunch of money.
Do you think maybe it's where he trains? Do you think maybe it's he, you know, he's training overseas with, you know, he trains with Alir Latifi, who's really good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, does he have world-class coaching over there? I mean, does he have world-class sparring partners, people that recognize patterns?
So, yeah, so that's what I think, too, is it in Europe, and somebody mentioned this to me a couple months ago, is that in Europe, the coaches are better.
Really?
And I don't necessarily think that they're better, but they're more attentive. They're more attentive to their fighters. So they know. So if Gus were to leave his coaching staff, I think he'd be a worse fighter. I think he needs to keep his coaching staff, but maybe add something else to it.
We spent some time in Alliance.
Yeah. And I think he needed that.
Yeah.
But what he might need are just better partners.
Mm.
He might just need a few better guys to give him some different looks. But I think the coaching staff, his coaching staff is fine. I've worked with some of them before, because Ilir Latifi used to come to the top team, and I met all them guys. They're smart. And they're more attentive to their guys than American coaches. American coaches sometimes just go, all right, go ahead, roll, do what you got to do. There's a bunch of good guys in the room. I don't need to tell you nothing. You know? So like, I think that's the biggest difference between like America and then like in Europe.
They're more attentive. What's the reason for that?
Just not many guys to work with.
Right.
You know, so, you know, and you go to the States here, it's so big. Is you go to a room, there's one coach, 20 fighters.
Right.
And the coach is just like, well, you guys are good. Go ahead, spar, and whoever's left, we're going to get you a fight. Yeah. And
there's a little of that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, that's a similarity with comedy managers. It's a very similar thing. Like, there's some comedy managers that have like 100 clients, and they just like, go out there, figure it out.
Yeah. And if you're good at it, we're going to take you and take it to the top.
Yeah. I see like Kevin Hart. Oh, yeah. Must had a great manager. Look how good he got. No, he's fucking Kevin Hart. He was going to make it no matter who was his manager.
Right.
And then there's some that have like a small amount of clients, and they spend a lot of time with them.
Yeah.
And they calculate a career together. They map it out. You know, I think with fighters, a lot of times it is a lot of like who's left. Who's still standing?
Yeah, who's still standing? Yeah. And I think that, you know, being a coach at top team, we have a lot of coaches.
Yeah.
So I think that helps us.
That place is so big.
Yeah.
It's so big.
Yeah, it's so big. We have a lot of fighters, but we also have a lot of coaches. So we can give Amanda Nunez 100%. She gets whatever she wants.
Yeah.
You know, so she gets the attention. And I think it's just great because she can get that attention. Like in different places, she might not be able to get it. I mean, she would still get it, but with the level of our coaching expertise is just ridiculous,
dude,
though.
That chick is a savage.
I know.
She's a savage. She had a smile on her face when she was fucking up Cyborg.
I know.
She had like a half a grin when she was digging in. Like, it was half grit teeth, half smile when she was fucking her up. Like,
see, people like, they never, I don't think they gave her no credit.
I did.
Yeah, I mean, she hits hard. She knocked out Ronda. She knocked out, you know, she beat up Misha Tate. She knocked these girls out. But and they're like, oh, yeah, she fight like a dude, but she fight like a brother.
Yeah.
She got the little swag, you know what I'm saying? She fight like a brother.
Well, you know what, to me, I think one of the most impressive performances was Raquel Pennington.
Yeah.
Because I don't think people give Raquel Pennington enough credit. I think Raquel Pennington was one of those girls, like, you see her first fight with Holly Holm. She almost beat Holly Holm. She lost by split decision. Her fight with Ashley Evans-Smith, holy shit, was that chaos.
Yeah.
And she gets her in that bulldog choke and chokes her unconscious with like 1 second left. Like, it was madness, blood everywhere. I mean, that girl's tough as shit.
She's super, you're right, man. She's super tough. Yeah.
Top. And when Amanda fucked her up, I was like, good Lord.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a different Amanda. She's got everything now. Before, she had the power, but she didn't have the endurance, and she would fade and, you know, like, perfect example was the Kat Zingano fight. She fucked Kat Zingano up bad in that first round. So bad that Kat's head was fucked up for years afterwards. She was having problems with her cortisol levels. Her hormones were all fucked up.
No shit.
She gave her hypothyroid. She killed her thyroid in that fight.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Like, she talked about it on my podcast. She's like, that girl hit me so hard. She gave me a thyroid condition.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she went to all sorts of serious fucking traumatic brain injury therapy afterwards. They did this shit they do for soldiers down in San Diego. They did it with her. She went about it in detail with my on my podcast from Amanda. She's like, that bitch hits hard.
Yeah.
So hard. Like, different than anybody else. Like, yeah. Bang!
Well,
like,
I mean, what? She's just, I mean, she's really good at hitting home runs. Like, she swing, yeah. Her swing to contact ratio on the money, on the button, is just high.
Yeah, and the force behind it. Yeah. Like, you saw when she clipped Cyborg.
Yeah,
Cyborg,
yeah, yeah. Like, I said, what? Oh, my God. I know it was over. As soon as I saw it, I said, this is over.
Yeah.
This is
crazy,
over.
Crazy, crazy.
But Amanda's another one. Prime example. Because I've worked in all Amanda's camps, except for maybe, like, this last one. But she's not a fighter, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
What? What is she? She an athlete or is
she's
an
athlete.
Artist?
She's an athlete. She's an athlete and a competitor. So here's the thing: like, what if you know you can't just put Amanda and go, all right, spar. She's not gonna, and you try to push Amanda, she's not gonna respond well to that. And that was why I think, you know, in them fights she would gas out. Because, like, she didn't train properly. She wasn't happy really with her training. Because it was like everybody was trying to push her like a fighter. But when you let her do her thing, she pushes herself.
Oh.
Yeah, she pushed herself to the limit. But when you try to take control of her and, oh, you need to do this, you need that, she's not going to respond well to that. But you let her do her thing. Coach, I got this. Go ahead, you do it. World class. Best ever.
Weird.
Yep.
So for her, what was the missing ingredient when you look at like the early Amanda to like champ Amanda?
I think it wasn't necessarily missing ingredient. I think it was just everybody was pushing her too hard.
Really?
Yeah.
Pushing
Believe it or not,
they were
pushing her too hard. Oh, you need to come in. You need to come in and wrestle for 2 hours. You need to come in and do this. You can't be a world champ if you don't really train hard. And she was like, I don't know if I'm good. You know, I'm good. And I don't know if I'm down for that. Just let me do it. Let me figure this out. Let me figure what my body needs. And when she figured out what her body needs, she said, all right, I'm going to push myself. And she gave no less effort than what she would have gotten before, but she made the decision.
So maybe she just doesn't like people telling her what to do.
I think, that has a big part of it.
Because, like, she's now the best of all time.
Yeah, no doubt.
How does she knocked out Cyborg in 50 fucking seconds. She beat everybody.
Yeah.
She fucked up Misha Tate. I mean, she fucked up Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
I mean, she fucks up everybody.
I know.
She's the best.
She is.
She
no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Beat Valentina twice.
Yeah,
and
no,
I think
yeah.
If anybody is other than her who's the best, it's Valentina.
Yeah. Valentina's
a beast.
Yeah, she's a beast. But I think that the more confident Amanda gets, she just walks Valentina down and beats. She walks her down and beats her up if they fought
She's
again.
Too big.
Yeah, she's just too big, yeah. Too good, too
she
quick.
She's so goddamn hard. But Valentina's so skillful.
She's, yeah, and that's, like, stylistically, it doesn't make for a great fight because Valentina is so skillful.
Yeah.
So, like, it can,
she Amanda won't brawl with
yeah,
her.
She ain't gonna
stung,
brawl with her.
She'll
and
keep
she's
moving.
Got good defense and yeah. She moves her feet well.
She does everything.
Yeah, she's really good.
Yeah.
Like, I feel bad for them other girls that didn't fly weight.
Yeah, well, she might take over that division for a long fucking time.
Yeah,
she
for
might,
sure.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at what she did, she shut Yun Jaecheck down, and Yun Jaecheck was way healthier.
Yeah.
Way healthier at flyweight than she was at strawweight. I feel like strawweight, she just sucks too much weight, you know, drains her too much. She's not as durable because you look at the shots that she got hit with by Valentina, they're probably arguably harder shots.
Yeah. But she just, you're right.
She's more durable.
She's just not, she can't cut that weight and perform at the same level.
Yeah.
I don't know why fighters feel like that's the answer all the time.
Cutting weight.
I hate it. Yeah. I hate it. I'm like, if you're going to allow 7 pounds to dictate whether you can beat this guy or not, you got a problem.
Yeah.
Then you're not that good then.
Yeah.
You should never allow, like, 7 pounds to dictate whether you could beat somebody or not.
Do you think that the sport would be better if they eliminated weight cutting the way ONE FC did?
I think so.
I think so, too.
I think so. I wish they would.
I think the performance would be better. I think guys would be more durable. They'd be able to take shots better. And I think there'd be less bullshit. I think they just need more options in terms of weight classes. I think that's one. I think because there's too many giant jumps. Like 85 to 205. Like, what the fuck is that? 20 pounds is a lot.
Well, I mean, that's just one issue with this sport that's, like, incredibly antiquated.
Yeah.
Like, the weight classes.
Yeah.
Like, this stuff was 20 years ago. I mean, it was, and we're keeping it the same, like, the pay structure, antiquated.
Yeah.
Win bonuses. But knock a guy for winning.
Win
I'm like, why are we having win bonus? Knock a guy for winning. You're paying them double to win.
Yeah, well, not only that, you're paying these assholes to judge.
Yeah, judging is terrible.
You're paying people who don't know what the fuck they're watching. There's, I would love, I mean, there's some great judges. Don't get me wrong. If you're listening, you're a judge, and you're great, thank you. There's some terrible judges. And I would like to know how many of them have ever even trained.
Probably not many.
If you're watching someone, there's some crazy scramble, and some guy almost catches someone with something, and the guy gets away, and almost catches someone, and they gets away. The person who doesn't train, do they even understand how close it was? Like, how do they?
They don't. They don't know.
How could they know? How could they know?
They can't. They can't. But. And sometimes I get in arguments with people about this too. Another thing is like this, you know, the open scoring. I feel like we need open scoring.
I love that idea. Yeah.
I'm like, because as a coach, you go into a fight and like there's certain things that you want to do in certain rounds based on where you are in the fight.
Only argument against it is that a guy would coast. Yeah, but then the other guy would go crazy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think it would be more exciting to go, he's on the coast. But this is what's happening now. Both fighters are coasting because they thought they won.
Right. That's terrible.
So both fighters are coasting because they thought they won.
You have to be crazy to think that these judges got it right. You have to be crazy.
Yeah.
If like you won the first two rounds, like, I got this.
Yeah.
You got to be crazy. Yeah, you have no idea what these fucking people
say. You never know. You never know.
They might just be
guessing. Yeah. I think sometimes they do.
I think they do too.
But I'm like, man, if I knew what the score was going into the third round, I would be able to tell you better what you need to do.
You know what Douglas Crosby, you know, he's a judge, he told me once they were in the middle of a fight and some woman looked over at him. A guy had another guy in a Kimura and he's like, what is he doing? What is that?
Oh my God.
Like, what is a Kimura?
Oh my God.
It's not something crazy.
And I mean, these are the guys that are in charge of your life.
Your career.
Your career, yeah.
And especially in MMA. I mean, look, it's terrible in boxing as well. There's terrible decisions in boxing, but this one is insane because it's 50% of your purse.
Yeah.
The win bonus is 50% in most cases.
Yeah, I don't even know why we still do that.
I hate it.
Why do they still do that?
I hate it. Guys fight their heart out. They should get what they're supposed to get paid.
Yeah, you should get what you get paid.
Yeah.
And the only bonuses should be for finishing.
The idea that someone's not going to fight hard, like they're not going to fight as hard as they would if they – the guys want to win.
Yeah. You want to win. You're there to win anyway.
Everybody wants to win. You're not going to fight any harder.
Right.
Because there's a win bonus.
No. I've never come back to a guy in the corner and be like, hey, listen, you got that win bonus. You got the win bonus. You got to win this because of the win bonus. No, you want
to
win anyway.
Give some advice to fighters too. Stop asking for those performance bonuses. You're not going to get them when you ask. It just doesn't work that way.
Right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, man, they never get it when they ask.
Yeah.
Unless they need, it's obvious.
Yeah.
You know, there's some win bonuses where you're like, of course.
Yeah. Well, Conor started that whole thing, didn't he?
Did he?
I think he did. 50 G's, baby. I think he might have been the one to start that.
Maybe he did. But again, it was probably a performance where he was going to get it
anyway. Yeah, he would have probably got it anyway. He would have probably got it anyway.
There was some guys do it on like Fight Pass prelims, and I'm interviewing him. I'm like, you didn't say that.
Yeah. You're not going to get this. You mightn't have gotten it if you didn't say nothing.
Yeah. It's just, I don't like that either. I feel like the performance bonuses, I'm like, oh, come on, man.
I think they should give everybody a bonus if you finish, because then you're going to get guys looking to finish.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Having a finish bonus, on every fight.
Yeah, every fight.
Every fight.
If you finish, you get paid what you get paid, win or loss.
And then there's if you finish, X amount of dollars for every finish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
$10,000 to finish. $20,000 to finish. Whatever it is that you finish. Yeah.
I agree with that. That's great. I think that I do think that there's a real – I think it's unfair that you don't fix the judging, but yet you also have win bonuses. I think that's unfair.
It is. Oh,
I don't like it.
The fact – you just told me that story. It breaks my heart to think that these guys are judging in control of everybody's career, and he don't know what a Kimura is.
There's a lot of people like that out there. There's a lot of people like that out there. I mean, we've seen scores where it's just so – like. This is what I think. I think, first of all, three people is too few.
Yeah. I think seven should be the number.
That's a good number.
Yeah.
I would like this. I would like a good number, like seven maybe. But then on top of that, I want an online score.
Mm.
I want to see what people, and I want to get like, you know, just experts, like get a bunch of fighters to give their input on it, like have a pool of experts.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, what did Tyron Woodley think about that fight? Oh, Tyron's watching at home. He felt like it was this.
Yeah,
what did Mighty Mouse Johnson think? What did John Jones think? Like, if whoever wants to contribute, who wants to contribute to the pool, like have a verified account and say this was, I'm scoring it at home. It was this. You know, this, it was that. And then you look at this online pool, like 90% felt it should have gone this way, but the judges went the other way.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
kind of shit.
Yeah.
That kind of shit would be very telling.
Yeah, and I don't get it. Like, because we all look at fights and go, all right, that shit was not, that's not how it went.
Right.
This guy won, but we all know he didn't win that fight.
What's like the big, can you put, I'm trying to think, like, what's the most egregious example that you could come up with?
Well, I just saw a fight, and where was I? It was Justin Scoggins fought a kid just recently, and I think he got dropped from the UFC from that loss.
It was a bad decision.
Oh, it was a terrible decision. I'm thinking, oh, yeah. I went. In fact, I left to get something to drink, because I was like, oh, he won that.
Scoggins got dropped?
Yeah, he just fought in, like, Japan or somewhere, yeah.
He's good.
Yeah.
He got weird style, too.
Yeah.
Sideways, karate style, but
he's like a
wrestle.
Small, like, wonder boy that could wrestle.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah. Right?
Well, they're all from the same area. Like, they do a lot of karate up in the Carolinas, yeah. I think.
It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Did you see that Robin Black breakdown of the dude? This, I've always said that one thing that I used to see in sport karate and I used to see in Taekwondo was sliding. Like, guys knew how to lift up that front leg and slide in.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, I don't see that a lot in MMA, but if someone was good at it, there was a guy that I used to train with, his name was Larry Jones, and Larry was he was tall. He was like 6'2", but his legs went up to his armpits, man. It was crazy. This dude would just fuck people up with his front leg in Taekwondo tournaments. He would just slide across. Bam!
Yeah.
Just slide across. And people just didn't know what to do with that front leg. They were trying to figure out that front leg. And Robin Black, see if you can find this. I think it's on his Instagram. This dude, I don't know who the guy is. I've never seen him fight before. But he slides in with a side kick. Bam! Slides in again. Bam! And then goes to the guy's face. He's covering like 15 feet with his one leg up in the air and one leg down, just sliding in with his hips and his momentum.
Well, see, that's a unique skill to have. And I got to tell you, and like when me and Tyron, when we first started training for the Wonder Boy fight, we couldn't find anybody that could do that, really.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people have problems with Wonder Boy, because, oh, yeah, I'll just get a bunch of guys that can strike. But his striking is different.
It's different. It's very different. And it's, here's the guy. Look at this. Watch this guy do.
Is it this one?
Yeah. Okay. But do it from the beginning, though.
Well, it's got to reset.
Yeah, but just reset it. Watch this guy. Watch how this guy does this. This is crazy.
Robin Black, and this is your 1 minute.
See how he slides?
Wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
Look at this slide. Watch this. Boom! Steph, that's some serious sliding.
Oh, my goodness.
Serious coverage. The distance of that, and that you see a lot in those sport karate guys.
Yeah.
And especially guys that know how to correctly throw a front leg sidekick. And this dude, whoever this gentleman is, he really knows how to do it. What is his name?
Jamie Faulding.
Yeah, click on his shit. I gotta follow that dude. Oh, he's a jiu-jitsu guy too? Damn.
He's gonna be tough.
Some serious fucking power with that front leg. But he's also, if you watch, go back to that original clip again, you watch what he does when he does it. Watch how he lifts his knee up waist height, which is critical.
Yeah.
Because everybody, the people that do it wrong, their knee is low.
Yeah.
Their knee is low and they're kicking up. His knee goes high. His knee goes like when he throws it, it comes off straight. See, look how high his knee is. His knee is like up where his hip is, and then as he throws it in a straight line. You just get all this power. See, he
and I like how
him.
He even delayed. Like he just hopped. And when he got in range, then he delivered.
Yeah, man. I used to see a lot of people in the Taekwondo days that were real good at this, and very few in MMA until this guy. Like bang. Like, that is a fucking – look at that stretch on this dude. That's some serious flexibility, too. And to fuck a guy up with a front leg sidekick to the dome like that, that's incredible. But it's the slide that's the most impressive. The distance he covers.
If you're
not used to that, you think you're okay because you're outside. But you're not even nearly outside. You're right in the wheelhouse.
And, like, he doesn't have to change his position. Yeah. He's not vulnerable to a lot of attacks.
Yeah.
Being like that.
Wonder Boy has an interesting way of doing it. It's a little bit different. Wonder Boy does a slide, but his leg comes up from the ground. Like, he's lifting his foot up, and you're not even sure what it is. And then as he's extending it, it's still low, and then he brings it up.
Yeah, yeah,
he stabs you in the stomach with it, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
The Johnny Hendrix fight's a great example of that. Johnny didn't know what the fuck he was doing. And then Johnny smiled, and then he got roundhouse kicked in the face. Like, what?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, it's just because, like, the way, like, Johnny came up a little bit late. He came up after I did, but when I was coming up, nobody, you couldn't do karate.
Right. No karate.
No karate? You did karate? Psst. So, like, that whole stigma towards karate, just, like, it carried on for so long that now, like, if you do karate, you got an advantage because nobody knows how to defend it.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely something to some – as long as you do the other shit, there's something to some styles of karate.
Yeah.
But Connor does a lot of karate.
Yeah, you could tell. I mean, you see it in his style.
Yeah. That when we fought Aldo, he tried a front leg side kick to the thigh. Yeah, he slid back. But he's got a karate style. He's moving in and out karate-wise. Yeah. He's not Muay Thai.
No, he's very elusive. Yeah. But when he gets in boxing range, he put them hands on you.
Yeah,
like a boxer.
Yeah, that's an interesting style. That's an interesting way of doing it. There's just a bunch of different ways. That's the beautiful thing about MMA. There's a bunch of different ways to do it, man.
Yeah.
There's Ben Askren's way. Just grab a hold of you and gorilla fuck you. Ben throw you to the ground.
Ben is my man, too. Like,
I love that dude.
I've known Ben since before he started fighting. Like, he came, stayed at my house. My dog bit him and shit.
Your dog bit him?
Yeah, I had a little chihuahua that bit him and shit. But, Ben is my homeboy, man. And I think that I was nervous about him going to the UFC because I was thinking that, you know, they was going to get him too late.
Yeah.
You know, because like when he, you know, but I think he's
in his
good.
Prime. He's
still
never taken any damage.
Yeah, he never takes no damage. So I was just nervous that they get him too late. But, you know, Ben has been instrumental in Tyron Woodley's camps. I mean, his brain is just like we think on the same lines.
Well,
too.
He's a brilliant guy. Yeah. He's always sending me book suggestions. Like, he's smart as shit, dude. That guy reads.
Yeah.
But he's also very analytical in his approach.
Yeah.
You know, like he's not going to. You know, no disrespect to George Gurgel, but George Gurgel abandoned his jiu-jitsu and just started banging. Ben's not.
No, he's never going to do that. Yeah.
It's never happening.
And I like the way he thinks, too. He's like, you know, like he doesn't spend time away from what he's good at.
Yeah.
He stays in that realm.
Oh, he's always coaching?
Yeah.
Constantly involved in wrestling.
Yeah. He's always coaching kids. But, I mean, even with himself, like, we'll go up there. Ben ain't training for nothing. We'll go up and Ben will give Tyron however many rounds he needs.
Really?
Yeah. You know, most guys, I got to bring in like 2-3 guys in to get Tyron some work.
Yeah.
Ben will give him work.
Yeah.
No matter what. No matter what kind of shape he's in, he gives Tyron work.
Well, he was talking about, you know, if they do open up that 165-pound division, which I guess they're talking about, because there's so much talent in that division. I really think if they moved it to 75 and they had a 65, 75, 85, I think that's better.
Yeah.
And then Ben would fight at 65 because he doesn't want to, you know, fight Tyron.
Yeah.
Him and Tyron are real good friends. But I like a lot of matchups with him. I really love the Robbie Lawler fight. I mean, I know they pulled off that fight because the Anaheim card fell apart.
But they're going to fight.
Is it on Brooklyn?
I think they're fighting March 2nd.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
Is it Robbie and him?
And Robbie and
I
Ben.
I felt like they were going to make that a headliner for a fight night. I felt like I saw Robbie's face. I don't know if that's been solidified. I should just text Ben and ask.
Yeah, him. Yeah, right.
Or text Dana. It's a great matchup though. That's where you see where Ben fits in is against world class competition.
I mean, you'll see where he fits in against world class competition, or see if Robbie is done or not.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
It's a great fight,
right,
for both guys.
Or if Robbie's still a savage.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Robbie taking the time off, too.
Yeah.
I think that's important for Robbie. I mean, you look at the wars.
Wars
that guy went through. The Carlos Condit fight. The fucking Rory McDonald fight. I mean, good Jesus Christ.
I know.
Who gets out of that unscathed? Not a single human that's ever lived gets out of that fight unscathed.
And he needed that. He needs time off.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you get hit like that and just – he's a savage. He's a fighter.
When he was screaming and his lip was split open – I mean, it was like a zipper was open.
Yeah.
And he's screaming. I'm interviewing him after the fight, and I'm like, dude, I can see your teeth. Like, literally, you see his teeth right through his mouth. I mean, right through his lips.
Oh.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah, and he didn't give a fuck.
No.
Stitch it up.
No, like, he's a fighter, man.
A fighter.
Like, that's the type of guy, like, hey, get on that bag.
Yeah.
And throw some meat at you.
Well, he used to not even spar, which is really crazy. When he's fighting Strikeforce, he wasn't even sparring. And I asked him about it. He goes, well, I already know how to fight. Okay. Questions are over. Thank you.
Well, I mean, also too, you got but you got to look at it too, like where he comes from.
Yeah.
Like, you know, them dudes in the Midwest don't got no filter. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. They was just trying to kick shit out of each other every sparring practice.
That was every practice.
Yeah, every practice.
The militage days.
Just knocking guys out, drag them off the floor until they wake up, and then bring another guy in. And then when they wake up, bring them back in.
Bring them back in. Bring them back in. That's what's really crazy. When guys get KO'd, I remember that from boxing gyms. You'd watch guys get dropped, like, boink! And then they'd be sparring like 10 minutes later. Like, what are you doing?
Ugh.
You should be in the hospital.
Yeah, right?
Do you understand what just happened to your brain stem?
See, I don't like that part of the game, you know? Well, and I don't even know if it's even necessary.
It's not necessary.
It's not necessary.
It was ignorance. Because if that guy gets hit again, he could get like... Do you know Joseph Valtellini, after he beat Mark DeBont in Glory?
Mm-hmm.
He won. He won the title. He was fucked up for months. Like, he couldn't have any lights on. He had to be in a room. He said that the light from like a charger, from a cell phone charger, that little tiny little light would fuck his head up. It'd give him headaches.
Ugh.
He had a severe concussion from a fight he won. He got clipped with a giant knee in that fight.
Gah!
And just boom, sent his head back. And even though he won the fight, he still was fucked up for a long time afterwards.
So I was looking up
UFC 235 take shape with two title fights and three ex-UFC champs. So is that on the card?
It says it's Jones, Anthony Smith,
ooh,
Tyron versus Kamaru Usman, and then Askren and Lawler.
Woo! That's it.
There we go.
Is that March 2nd?
Yeah.
That's in Vegas, right?
Yeah.
God damn. Pray to the MMA gods. Keep that card together.
Then don't forget Pedro Munhoz and Cody Garbrandt.
Ooh, is that on that fight
too? That's on there too, yeah.
Wow. Yes. Wow. That's a fucking card right there. That's a fucking card.
Here's the rest of it. Holly Holm's also on it. Zabit.
Holly Holm, Aspen Ladd.
Can't get rid of that ad.
So. Zabit and Jeremy Stevens. Holy shit. Gotta love it. Mickey Gall and Diego Sanchez. Jesus. Ovin St. Preux and Misha Cirkunov.
Man, that's a great card.
That's a fucking crazy card. That card's bombs away, man. That is a bombs away card. I don't know about Anthony Smith and John Jones. Wow.
I don't even know why they made that fight in the first place.
They probably
just needed
John wants to fight again.
Really?
Yeah, John's probably, he had to take 2 years off, no money, all that bullshit. Finally gets his title back. He's like, let's keep this ball rolling.
Yeah.
You know, and then probably also feels like the best way to get back to like his top form is to compete regularly. You know, gets loose so he could really show what he can do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the fucking pressure that must have been on John from that fight, you know?
I mean, part of me wants to feel bad for him. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on this young man.
Yes.
But then a part of me is like, man, will you stop fucking up?
Yeah. It's again, I think it's what we're talking about with fighters and, you know, they're crazy. They're impulsive. They're wild.
They make
mistakes. They do stupid shit, especially if they like to party.
Yeah.
You add that into the mix, I'm like, you're going to make some piss-poor decisions.
Man, I should have saw the signs. I hung out with John. This was before he was big time. It was in Buffalo. It was like some small show in Buffalo. Like, I don't even know why he was there. And like, he was just doing like fucking Jack Daniels, like out the bottle. I was like, what the fuck?
But that's also why he's so good.
Yeah.
Because he's such a wild motherfucker. There's an ingredient list in great champions.
Yeah.
You know? And part of the greats.
Part of it is they just don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
They go. And that was what I was saying about Amanda. When you allow her to not give a fuck and don't try to control her.
Yeah.
She's going to fucking rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
But the problem is it doesn't work for everybody because some people need to be controlled because they can't rise to the occasion like that.
Right.
But when you let them do their thing, man, they just rise to the occasion.
It's funny trying to figure out what is that, what's the right mix?
Yeah.
It's the right mix of discipline and conditioning, but then just being free, you know? Dominic Cruz brought this up when we were doing commentary. He's like, some guys fight better with like a week's notice. Like,
yeah.
They just,
no pressure. Just don't feel, show up.
Yeah. Just show up and they're good, you know? Some people fight better when they're the underdog. Nobody's thinking they're going to win. They're like, I'll show you, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And you go out there and put on a show.
I also think part of Amanda, that part of existing Amanda, too, is that when she's the underdog, it's just less pressure on her. So, again, there's another distraction away. So she's just like, all right, watch this.
Yeah.
I'm the underdog. Watch how I fuck y'all. But when y'all put pressure on me to be the, you know, to win this fight easily, you know, I think she can hold back a little bit.
Well, she was this favorite against Raquel Pennington. She was a favorite against Raquel, and I think that was one of her best performances.
Yeah, but Raquel hung in there a little bit, you know.
She did a little bit, but she never threatened.
Raquel had a round or two.
In her. I don't think she did.
She had a round.
You think she won a round?
She took Amanda down at one point and had a round.
Maybe. I don't think so.
But, I mean, don't get it twisted. I don't think Amanda was in trouble or anything. But
interesting. I think Amanda won every round. If I'm recalling it correctly, I'd have to go back and look at it. But I remember thinking it was like a slow, steady beatdown.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was. I mean, it was pretty. Yeah. It was convincing. It was a pretty easy fight for her. But
who the fuck is what's left for her? Especially like there's like one legit featherweight. Size-wise, it's Megan Anderson. But Megan got exposed a little bit by Holly.
Yeah.
You know, because Holly took her down and really dominated her in the clinch and got her kind of to the ground at will. And I'm sure she's tightened up a lot of that, but...
Nah, she doesn't. She's too slow.
You think so?
Yeah. And like, a lot of people don't understand, like, speed is everything in this game, really. More so than size. That's why I was saying about, like, cutting weight. Speed is key in this game. And a lot of people get exposed when they're not fast enough, you know, because, and I don't mean necessarily even just speed and physically, like it's heavyweight speed physically, but like speed and decision making,
right?
Speed, all that speed is key. And I don't think Megan Anderson is going to be have enough speed to deal with Amanda.
Well, you also have to think that Megan Anderson, when she fought Holly Holm, that was her UFC debut, right? And that is that octagon shot is legit as fuck.
We've all had it.
We've
all had it.
See that moment where the bright lights hit you for the first time, you're like, whoa. And then also her first fight is against Holly fucking Holm. Like,
I know.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, that's as experienced as you get. I mean, Holly is like an 18-time world boxing champion
She was like 27-2. She was a boxer. Yeah.
Until Amanda knocked out Cyborg, she had the greatest highlight reel KO in a championship fight. Well, yeah, in a championship fight. Because I think that Jessica Andrade, when she knocked out
Karolina
Kowalkiewicz, that was a bigger knockout than Holly Holm.
Right.
It was like one, not bigger. It was right up there.
Yeah.
It was right up there. But Amanda just took the fucking cake.
It was like,
she's like, hold my beer. Yeah. She's like, you think you saw the best women's MMA KO ever? Hold my beer.
Yeah.
Because it's who she did it to.
I know.
It's everything. And she did it to someone.
I mean, I ain't going to lie, man. I was surprised. As much as I love Amanda, I hold her dear to my heart. I was even surprised.
Dude, she throws bricks.
I know.
You know what she's like? She's like a bowling ball on the end of a rope.
Yep.
Boom.
But have you ever spent time around her and hung out with
a little
her?
Bit out the, you know, at the fights when she's not fighting backstage? Very friendly.
But this is what I'm saying. You know, like a lot of fighters are like, you know, they can have kind of aggressive personalities.
Yeah.
I mean, she's nothing like that.
Right.
I mean, she likes to sit at home. Like she's got Instagram pictures. Like she's cutting the grass and flip flops. I mean, she's just so carefree, and she just like she likes to play with her dogs in the backyard.
Well, I was upset when she was fighting Ronda that all the promos were about Ronda coming back.
Yeah, that pissed her off.
I said before when Ronda was about to fight Holly Holm, I said that I disagreed with that fight. I said I really think Amanda Nunes is the most dangerous challenge for Ronda. I said because Amanda has a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and her hands are what's really scary. Like when Ronda has to close the distance to get a hold of you, when she gets you on the ground, she's armbarring you. I mean, I felt like Amanda like sizes up with her. Like, that's the most dangerous challenge, in my opinion. But then Holly knocked her out. And then when you saw Amanda knock out Ronda, I was like, well, how did you guys not see this coming? Like, this is not a good matchup. And you spent the entire promo talking about this one person who's not the champion, who's coming back after a devastating knockout. And then you didn't show anything about the one person who is the champion, who's the first openly gay women's champion in the history of the sport, right? She's the first gay UFC champion.
Yep.
And she's a fucking destroyer. I mean, she's exciting as shit. And all you're showing is Ronda pacing around her mansion. You know, Ronda getting excited about this fight and thinking, I'm going to go out there. I'm like, Jesus Christ. And then backstage, here was what was crazy. I was listening to these agents talk because Ronda's fights, one of the things that was interesting about it was she was such a force, such a cult of personality that she had all these agents and shit around. Like all these, like, it was all agentified backstage. So I hear these guys talking. And they're like, one agent dork is talking to the other agent dork, and he goes, "Who's Ronda fighting?" And he's, I'm paraphrasing, but he's basically said, "I don't know who she is, but she's a victim." Her, like, I don't know who it is. Let's call her a victim.
So they really thought they had no idea what was going to happen.
I mean, look, that's what they were hoping. They were hoping that Ronda wins because she's this gigantic superstar. Like, if Ronda comes back, beats Amanda Nunes, wins the title back, rematches Holly Holm, beats Holly Holm, yes, she's back. But instead, she gets murked in 48 seconds. I mean, Amanda just put it on her. And I was saying to them afterwards, like, this is what I was telling you. Like, how the fuck are you not promoting her? Like, what she just did. If you put equal time promoting her, now you got a new star in your hands. Instead, the story is Ronda Rousey got smashed. The story's not Amanda Nunes smashed.
That's where
Ronda
they really
Rousey.
Dropped the ball. Yes. Even afterwards, they didn't pick up with Amanda.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
But it's crazy to me. Like, it's crazy to me to think that they thought that this was going to be Ronda's comeback to stardom. Because, and I sent you the breakdown. I sent that to you. I don't know if you saw it, but. Because I scout all Amanda's opponents, and I do the breakdown. I come up with strategies for her. And after scouting Ronda, I said, this is going to be an easy fight for you. And I told her that.
Yeah.
I said, this is going to be easy. And it turned out to be easy. And it just surprises me that they thought that this was going to be the come-out party
for
Ronda.
I didn't talk to Dana about it. I told Dana before I thought it was a terrible matchup for Ronda, but that was before the Holly Holm fight.
No, she got this.
Well, he was saying, he thought that I was saying that Holly Holm, that Ronda was going to beat Holly. I'm like, well, I'm not saying that's easy either. That's a tough fight too.
Yeah.
But the thing about Amanda is punching power. Holly's not known for her punching power.
No,
she's known for her speed, her kicks, her timing, her technique, her toughness.
Yeah.
She's known for all her athleticism.
Endurance.
Physical strength.
Yeah.
She's known for all those things. She's not known just to go in there and blast girls.
Yeah.
Like, Amanda blasts people. She puts them into another dimension. She's different in that respect. But they didn't concentrate on that at all. I'm like, how are you not concentrating on this destroyer that Ronda's about to face? But show the Miesha Tate fight, and people would just be like, Jesus.
Yeah.
Beats the fuck out of her and then strangles her. Like, you're like, God.
I know. That's why it surprised me that they slept on Amanda. I'm like, how are y'all sleeping on her?
Because it's Hollywood, man. The narrative that they had was Ronda was the best ever, which she was when she was the best.
Right.
Until she but if you looked at the way she fought Holly, this is my opinion. I feel like there was a million things going on other than just fighting. There's a million things going on. There's movie offers. There's television shows. There's agents and deals and books and all this shit is happening. And then she's with Edmund, okay?
Yeah.
She's not an American Top Team. She's not dealing with a bunch of people that are being 100% honest and people who have a deep background of experience of training world-class mixed martial arts fighters who recognize the holes in her game, the strengths, the weakness. Someone like you who can, like, categorize who she is and how to mold her. There's no great minds behind her orchestrating this.
It's just some guy telling her, oh, you're great, you're getting better.
And she's holding the mitts, and she looks great on the mitts, and she does look great on the mitts.
There's times when she didn't look too bad on the mitts.
When she fought Betch Kohean, and she's in Brazil, you're like, damn, she looks like a fucking kickboxer.
Right?
But there's a big difference between that and then being able to do that on Amanda Nunes.
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
Yeah.
And you need world-class coaching. You need someone who's going to recognize there's hiccups in what you're doing. There's stages missing. One of the things that Greg Jackson said when they prepared her for Holly Holm they said, if you look at how she engages, it's always grab with the left arm. It's always grab with the left arm. And they were just whoop. Move out to the side.
Yeah.
And if you lock when she ducked under Ronda's punch and she went to that right side, she's always going to that right side. And then boom, there's that head kick.
That might have been one of the funniest moments in the history of
when she ducked that punch
and she hit the knee and hit the fence.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna lie, that was pretty funny.
Was indicative of like some serious errors in preparation and also I think the way she fought was just so reckless, just charging for champions don't fight like that, right?
But it's understandable. I'm going to say this in her defense is understandable because that's who she was at the time. Like I said, she was the greatest ever. So she didn't expect to ever be in this position.
Right.
You know,
that's true.
She got an she had an opportunity to correct it, and she dropped the ball on that.
Well, here's the thing about Ronda. She's very smart. She's very, very smart. But she's also very strong-minded and willed.
I believe
it. And there's probably very few people that can pull her aside and go, you got to listen to me because you get knocked the fuck out. This is real, okay? You're the greatest ever, of course, but this is not how you do this camp. This is not how you prepare for this person. We need more. We need different things. We don't need you just sparring boxing with people because you're not boxing. You're not going to have these gloves on. We need world-class MMA coaching. You need to figure out how to shoot and land a double. You can't just be grabbing and clinching because that shit doesn't work on everybody.
Right.
And like she almost got choked out by Liz Carmouche. Remember that?
Yeah, and Liz had her back for that little bit. Yeah,
she had her back. She was under the chin.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Ronda just gutted it out and got out of it because she's such a great grappler and her neck is so goddamn strong.
Yeah,
she gutted it out and made it out of there, but that was dangerous.
Yeah.
Her jaw was fucked up after that fight for a long time.
Really?
Yeah, from just getting cranked. Just getting the. I mean, Liz Carmouche is a. I mean,
she is. She's strong. I saw her in the back. I was like, this motherfucking bitch, she's strong as legs.
She's strong as fuck. And she almost pulled it off. I mean, she almost pulled it off from that. I mean, that headlock position is a very dangerous position, man.
Yeah.
You headlock someone, and their legs go around, and if that head pops out, they're on your back.
Yeah.
And it's the worst position if you can't pull it off.
Yeah.
And that was her thing. Her thing was headlock people, flip them to the ground. And it worked on almost everybody. But it's like,
eventually it was going to catch up. Yes. You know, eventually it was going to catch
up. Maybe, maybe not. But the thing is, you need, look, you could look at a guy like Mighty Mouse, who we both agree is like the best expression of mixed martial arts talent. That guy does everything. He shoots doubles. He'll ankle pick you. He'll hit you with a flying armbar.
Yeah.
He'll do whatever the fuck he wants. He could do everything. You can't have only one approach to success. Because as soon as someone figures out, oh, she grabs with that left arm, I'm just going to get the fuck out of there. I'm not going to be anywhere near that left arm.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was saying about speed, too. Like, when you look at like a guy like Mighty Mouse, like, he's doing all that with speed.
Yeah.
And the precision of his technique is just like unstoppable.
Ridiculous speed. I grabbed him once, just joking around backstage, and he hit me with two knees to the body. I was like, Jesus, man. It was so fast. I was like, my brain is too slow to even calculate that, you know, that kind of the move. I was like, oh, imagine being Henry Cejudo when he fought him and had to experience that in the first fight.
Yeah.
In particular, realized like, oh, Jesus.
I know. But Henry came back. He made an adjustment. But I think in a rematch, I think DJ beats him in a rematch.
Do you think DJ beats him in the rematch? I wonder, because it was very close.
Yeah.
It was very close.
That's what I'm saying. It was a very again, eventually it catches up to you.
But
like, streaks get caught up to
him. How did he win? He won by taking him down.
Yeah.
He didn't win by dominating him.
Right.
It's not like how Mighty Mouse beat him. He destroyed him.
Right.
It's like he has a much better chance of finishing Cejudo than Cejudo has of finishing
him. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So that's why I think DJ, if they fought again, I think DJ finishes him. The only guy I think gives DJ a problem. And you might not know.
Who?
Well, we haven't seen TJ at 125 yet.
Right.
But Kyoji Horiguchi.
Really?
Oh, my God.
But he beat Horiguchi.
He did, yeah, but that was years ago.
Really?
Yeah, that was years ago.
He armbarred. He dominated him and then armbarred him with 1 second
he
ago.
He did, but...
Fucked him up.
But this guy's got speed.
You coaching Horiguchi?
I've worked with him a little bit, but I'm not like his main guy.
Right.
But this guy's got speed. Unbelievable speed.
He's got serious knockout power,
and
too.
And serious knockout power.
I have to see.
Yeah.
I believe you. I think you know your shit.
I think he gives DJ. I'm not saying that he will beat him if they ever fight. I'm just saying.
But he could.
He could.
I thought Scoggins was a real threat. When I first saw Scoggins, I was like, this guy.
He should have been.
Yeah. I was like, this guy with that style, that karate style, but also can wrestle. And
I think that had to do it more with coaching than anything, though.
Mm.
And I hate to say that because he's probably got a coach right now listening, going, motherfucker. But I really do think that is like maybe not really filling in his holes, you know, because he's got a lot to work with.
Mm.
Like you said, like that karate style, he can wrestle. I'm sure he's got decent submissions, but he's probably got some holes.
Coaching is so critical. Coaching can take a guy who could be a journeyman and turn him into a world champion. There's this pivot, like. The fights you choose, the things you do, when you do them, You know, when to say no to things, when to say yes to things.
Yeah, guidance and coaching.
Yeah.
But the problem with fighters, man, is they're so damn hard-headed.
Yeah, you have to be, right? Yeah, you have to have crazy beliefs
in
yourself.
Yeah, you do. You have to. And that's like we were saying earlier, like Amanda, she hard-headed sometimes, you know, like, but that's what got her success. But most fighters are hard-headed and aren't in a position to be hard-headed.
Right.
And
right.
That's like the hard part is like, you're trying to tell them, listen, you need to listen to me right now. I'm like, no, I got this. And then their career is just...
It's crazy because that's what made them a fighter in the first place, right? Tell everybody else to fuck off.
Yeah, that's it.
Stepfather beat their ass and they left the house when they're 16. Fuck you, I'll show the world.
Some fucking girl dumped them in high school. And that's happened to me and shit, but that's what happened to me. And then next thing I know, I'm out there and I'm fucking getting in the cage.
I feel bad for dudes who didn't get dumped. I do.
Why that?
Because it's good for you.
Yeah.
It taught me a lot, man. I remember my girlfriend in high school dumped me. I was devastated for months. Just devastated. But then I realized, like, what the fuck is wrong with me? And I thought, imagine if I married that girl. Ugh. Imagine if I had kids with her. And ugh. And every day was just torture, her bitching at me and controlling. And ugh. I got light. I got off light.
Well, here's one for you then, Joe. Well, same thing happened to me. I got dumped in high school.
Yeah.
The girl started dating another dude. I ended up hitting this motherfucker in the head with a wrench.
A wrench?
Yeah, I had to hit the motherfucker in the head with a wrench.
Why'd you hit him in the head with a wrench?
I don't know. He pissed me off.
Oh.
He pissed me. He made me so mad.
Did he make you mad because he was banging the girl, or did he make you mad on top of that?
Oh, on top of that. Oh. Yeah. So I ended up hitting him, and then I ended up going to jail.
Damn.
And I ended up doing 52 weekends in jail.
Damn.
But within that time.
Every weekend.
I had to go in on Friday for a year, come out on Sunday for a year. So I couldn't leave. I couldn't leave my city. So in that time, I taught myself how to fight. That's why I'm here today.
Wow.
Yep. And
so during the weekends.
During the week, because I couldn't leave. So I would just, I work. And then me and Paul Rodriguez, he fought Tony D'Souza in UFC 32.
Yeah.
Me and him, we trained, we taught ourselves how to fight in the backyard watching videotapes.
Wow. Tony D'Souza, the originator of the Peruvian necktie.
Yep.
That's where that came from.
Is that really where that came from?
Yes, he's Peruvian.
No kidding. That's where that came from, huh?
Yeah.
That
Peruvian necktie is a motherfucker. That's a great move. Yeah. That was Tony's shit.
Yeah. I incorporate that in one of my systems, man. I love that move.
He's a hell of a grappler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he ended up choking out Paul Rodriguez, UFC 32. And that was the night I got knocked out by BJ.
Wow.
Yeah. But it all happened because I got dumped.
Wow. That's crazy. You hit him with a wrench, huh?
Yeah. Ouch. Yeah, I know. I ain't proud of it.
Yeah. But how old were you?
I was 17. Yeah. The
frontal cortex not even fully formed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, you're making dumb decisions. You're 17. Like, you with the girl at 17 for 2 years. That's half your damn life.
I know, right?
You know, so you thinking that's the one.
Also, like, the heartbreak, if you're not accustomed to it, like, everybody experiences heartbreak. Somebody breaks up with you, like, oh, I feel like shit. But then you call your friends up, like, come on, man, we'll go out. Get a couple of drinks, then you have a couple of drinks, like, whatever. Yeah. And then you get a text from an ex, and you're like, oh, shit,
here it goes.
We're back in the game. And you'll be all right.
Yeah,
you know?
Fuck that girl. Yeah, I'm all right.
I think it's good to get broken up with. It's good. You learn. You know, you learn. You learn why you were annoying to her. You know, like there's some stupid shit that you're doing that you don't even realize you're doing, but you're doing it, and then it becomes a pattern, and you do it again and again and again, and then finally they dump you, and then you get some reflection time. You're like, ugh. Why am I so annoying?
Yeah, I remember hearing you talk about that before, about like self-reflection and awareness. Yeah. And like, that's so important, man.
It's critical.
Being real to yourself and being aware of where you are in relation to everybody else in the world.
I try to coach myself.
Do you?
Yeah. I try to sit down with myself. And when I do like meditation sessions and shit, I try to pretend that I'm like a coach and I'm looking at myself honestly. I was like, all right, dude. You ain't spending nearly enough time doing this. Like, you need to fix that. I'm like, yeah, you're right. And I'm like,
no, but man, that's great. I might have to start doing that because
it's a skill. Like you have to like develop it.
Because I think like that's part of most people's problems is that they're not aware of where they are in life.
You know, another problem that people have too is momentum. They get caught up in momentum of doing stupid shit, or momentum of being lazy, or momentum of eating bad, or drinking, or whatever it is that's bad.
Yeah, and they can't break that.
You get caught up, and you need to stop reflection. And that's one of the reasons why I think meditation is so important.
Oh, yeah. I meditate every day.
Do you?
Yeah.
How do you do it? What do you do?
I lay down and close my eyes. So what I do is I'll start with some self-talk first, just to get me going. Self-talk, positive affirmation statements. Just lay down, quiet,
for about 10 minutes. Can you give me an example? Like, what kind of self-talk? Like, what kind of positive affirmation?
Just, you know, just, you know, I appreciate life. Appreciate where I'm at.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep going. I'm doing, you know, just every day, strive to be better. You know, or I'll get even more detailed, you know. You know, I do a lot of entertainment, try to do a lot of entertainment stuff. So I want to get better at public speaking.
Yeah.
So I'll, you know, try to talk myself into it.
You do a little stand up.
Yeah, I do stand up. I do every so often.
I heard you funny.
Ah!
I heard you funny.
Not at the Dime Bar last time I was there.
That's tough. That Dime Bar is sketchy.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, good. That makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeremy Piven said the same thing. He said, yeah, I bombed. I was like, not when I was there.
Yeah.
But, so I'll try to, I'm intelligent. You know, I'm smart. I'm going to make it. I got this. I'm making lots of money. You know, I try to talk myself into that. And then for the next 20 minutes or so, I just sit in silence and just let all of that soak in.
Mm. Do you concentrate on your breathing or anything?
Yeah. Because, you know, like if I get distracted, like noise or whatever, I have to center it back to my breathing.
Yeah, that's the big one for me. I've tried a bunch of different styles of meditation, but one that I like the best, especially in the tank, is breathing. Hey, you bring shorts with you?
Today?
Yeah.
No, but
have you done the tank?
No, what is that?
You never heard about it?
No, I never done it.
You could do it today.
I want to do the tank. Yeah.
Okay, we'll set it up.
I want to do it. Yeah,
it's right out here. I'll show it to you after.
Somebody said something about some tank.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
There's only one guy who's used this tank other than me, unless Jamie's been sneaking here in the middle of the night, is Dan Harris from Good Morning America. He's used it because he's a big meditator, and I set him up with it. But it's amazing. It's a tank that's filled up with – it's a flotation tank. It was made by this guy named John Lilly, who was a psychedelic adventurer and a pioneer in interspecies communication. He was working on trying to communicate with dolphins. He would take acid and get in the tank and take acid and give dolphins acid. And he was out of his fucking mind. Lilly was a real trip. You know, his books are amazing. He was a super genius who was going through his career during this psychedelic revolution, like the Timothy Learys and all those people of the time, Terence McKenna, and he was trying to figure out a way to separate the mind from the body. And one of the things that he realized is like sensory input. Like you and I are sitting here, your butt is touching the chair, your feet are touching the floor, you feel the table. All that stuff, those are signals. Those signals go to your brain. Your brain's processing that. And the way the analogy that I always make is imagine if you and I were having this conversation, but right over there, there was a dude with a jackhammer. Just da, 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 da. We could still talk, but it would be super distracting.
Right.
And maybe you wouldn't be able to express yourself the right way because you would be taking in the input of all that noise.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd be like, hey, man, let's go talk over there where it's quiet. And you go talk over there, and it would be easier because there'd be no distraction. Well, your whole body's a distraction. Everything's a distraction. Sitting down's a distraction. The lights in this room were a distraction. The fact that Jamie's here and the table's here and you're taking into account all the objects around you, and this is all input. Without input, your brain becomes a very different thing. So in the tank, the water is heated to 94 degrees. That's the temperature of the surface of your skin. Then there's 1,000 pounds of Epsom salts in the water. So, which is really good because your body gets the magnesium from that, but also really good because you float like a motherfucker. You lie in that thing and half your body is above the surface of the water. You're just floating because there's so much salt. It's so dense. And then you lay back and then you close the door. Total darkness. You don't see anything. You open your eyes just as dark as when you close your eyes. Then total silence. Your ears are underwater. You're just laying there floating in this water. And once you center, because you kind of wiggle around a little bit because the water's swishing you, because you step into it and, you know, you gotta let the water settle and relax and then let your arms settle. And you can't tell where the water is and where the air is because it's all the same temperature. Because the water is the same temperature as your skin. You don't feel the water after a while.
Uh-huh.
And you get relaxed. So then when I'm in the tank, then I concentrate on my breathing. All I'm concentrating is in with the good, out with the bad. In with the good, out with the bad. I'm just concentrating in, breathing through my nose, out through my mouth. And I'm only letting myself concentrate on the nose. But I'll think about stupid shit like, oh, I got to clean my closet and I got to do this, and I haven't been in yoga in a week, and but all those thoughts eventually will go away. I just gotta go, don't do that, don't do that, don't think about that. Like, man, I think about Lisa, my car's up soon. I need to get a new car. can't let those things in. Right. You just gotta think of the breathing in through the nose, out through the mouth. And I never, in all my times of doing this, I've never had a pure experience where I didn't have to fight off those thoughts.
Yeah,
some people
for sure.
think they. Oh, one day you'll get to a point where you just,
I've never had that.
Been there. I try all the time.
Yeah.
But when you have the absence of any sensory input, your brain becomes supercharged. You could see your life much more clearly. There's nothing there but you and your thoughts. Your mind is detached from your body. This is what Lilly figured out. He figured out a way to separate the body from the mind.
Damn. But you sure I'm afloat, because you know black people don't swim.
Dude, I don't swim either.
Oh, really?
I sink like a rock.
All right, good.
Yeah. Dude, I sink like a rock.
Do you?
I barely can tread water. Barely. Even in the ocean, I struggle.
All right, because I ain't trying to die in your tank.
You're dense, man. I'm sure you... But that thing is so... There's so much salt in that water. Everybody floats. Floats. Yeah. It's basically like it has to be stirred up every day. There's a pump that constantly circulates it. It's got all these water purification tanks that are attached to it. There's purification filters, rather, for like they're these giant. The guy who made it is my friend Crash, who runs the Float Lab in Venice, which is the premier distributor of float tanks. They make the best shit on the planet, bar none. He's a mad scientist. When you see the whole setup back there, you realize. Like, there's so much salt in it that it has to constantly be recycled and move through. Otherwise, it'll crystallize, and you get these giant salt rocks that you can pull out of there.
Yeah.
So
it's got to constantly
be
moving.
You're going to float. You'll float like it's going to be beautiful. You'll be like that baby in Nirvana just floating around there.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to love it. It's amazing.
I definitely want to try it.
Yeah. But I feel like ATT could benefit from having one of those down there. It's a really good thing for fighters. It's a really good thing for relaxing. Like, Epsom salt baths, right? I mean, that's giant for just loosening your muscles and relaxing. Good therapy after you train. That's the more Epsom salts you're ever going to get in a fucking bathtub.
Yeah.
That is real Epsom salts.
You put that thing around a bunch of fighters, they have staff
jacking
and shit.
Off
and ringworm and
pissing
shit.
In there.
One of the Brazilians going to steal it.
Yeah. Right. ATT has, you guys have dorms too, right?
Yeah, we got dorms.
That's crazy.
It's great though. I mean, it's really helpful to the guys, because we got at all times we got like Brazilians and Dagestani guys and Greg living there. So
yeah, it's crazy.
yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's good though, man. I mean, it's the best gym on the planet. Can't complain.
But certainly one of them. I mean, it's in terms of the actual overall facility. I don't think there's another facility like it on Earth.
Nah.
It's number one, right? In terms of the size.
Yeah,
the
size.
And all what Dan Lambert has done. Like, fucking God bless Dan Lambert. That guy has put more money into the development of MMA than anybody other than the Fertittas.
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt about that. I can't think of another guy who has been around as long and has pumped more of his own money into just helping guys.
And he's such a good guy.
Yeah.
He's such a good guy and a fucking real man.
Man's
man. But not just a rich guy that's throwing his money in. He fucking trains.
He trains his black belt.
Yeah, he's legit.
Like, in his house, he had a gym, and he used to have all the dudes come over back in the day. Morla Bustamante and Armory Vitech would come over. The Nogueira brothers would be there training with him.
Yeah, he's legit.
Yeah.
But he loves it. I mean, he legitimately loves the sport. Like, when Amanda won and he was in the cage, he was so happy.
He probably shed a tear, was crying and shit. Sure. He's a legit dude, man.
Yeah, he's very legit. But what he's done is amazing, because he had an amazing gym already, and then he built this gigantic fucking facility. Built it from the ground up, specifically
for
that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
He bought the land and built the gym on top of it.
Who the fuck does that? Everybody else just goes to a warehouse and goes, we'll set up the cage over here. No, he designed it.
I know. I wish they designed it a little differently, though, because I would like to have seen the pros separate it.
How so?
From, like, general population.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know, that's something that it's easy to look back hindsight and say, it was better if they were separated. But, like, now it's kind of like, you kind of want to separate your pros from, like, you know, five-year-olds taking class, you know.
You
got, Arlovsky walking around with no shirt on and, like, his hairy chest bumping into, like, some old lady who's there with her grandson, you know.
You look at his nose, you're like,
it's a bit scary, you know. So, I mean, it just, you know, my selfishness is like, we need to stay on the side so we can't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how many regular folks do you have coming into that gym?
Like, regular folks?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's a whole thing of, like, regular folks.
Really?
Yeah.
So like classes for little kids.
Yeah, classes for little kids. Wow. You know, regular jiu-jitsu, regular kickboxing. And watching guys
banging out in the same
gym.
Well,
we do. I mean, we do a good enough job of having the bang out sessions in the morning.
Oh, okay.
But like at night, you know, they're still running. You know, the fighters are still running around acting a fool. You know.
Is there good pictures of what it looks like online?
Yeah, yeah. I think
Google
American Top Team.
American Top Team, the new gym in particular. Yeah. Fucking incredible facility, man.
Yeah.
How much did that shit cost?
I don't know. God, I don't know.
So
but
expensive.
Just
the land alone.
To think about it.
Look at that place.
I mean, it's, you know, South Florida, too. So.
Yeah, it's expensive as shit. That's an amazing facility, too. And they have a giant, look how big the mat space is. Holy shit. Stadium stairs or seats.
Yeah.
Do they have a whole strength and conditioning set up down there,
like
too,
on the
right?
other end of that, where you see that mat end, like the strength and conditioning side over there and kickboxing side.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, that's what everybody hopes for. I mean, how many people must move down there just to be able to train there?
You know, honestly, we don't. I mean, we do get a lot of people that move down there just to train there, but I think we do better with guys who come and just do camp.
Really?
Yeah.
How come?
I don't know. We just seem to, because we can provide for them. Mm-hmm. We have dorms.
Right.
Yeah, so we have dorms. So it seems to work out better for most guys where they live somewhere else. And then they want to just come do camps. They come for 6 weeks. They stay in the dorm for 6 weeks. We tighten them up. Mm-hmm. Boom.
Yeah. Who does that?
A lot of people do
that. Well, Robbie was doing that, right?
Yeah. No, Robbie actually moved down.
He moved down.
Yeah, Robbie moved down.
Tyron was doing that, right?
Not really. Tyron comes down whenever he feels like it.
Mm.
But he does his camps at Milwaukee. We go to Duke Rufus's.
What do you think about him fighting Usman?
I like Usman.
It's a great fight.
Yeah, I've always liked Usman.
I like him as a fighter for sure.
Yeah,
I don't know him as a person, but as a fighter, he's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, he's super smart.
Yeah,
he's really good. He's very versatile.
He can do everything.
He can do everything.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's more of a challenge than Colby.
Yeah.
Because Usman brings more to the table.
Striking wise, power wise.
Power.
And the Colby thing though was in terms of like a marketing fight. Like, I felt like that was a very good fight, marketing-wise.
Yeah, I think they could have had that fight stand alone.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder
why they didn't do that.
I think they could have had that fight stand alone. They didn't need John Jones and Anthony Smith.
I think Colby talks a lot of shit. I think he doesn't just talk shit when the cameras are on. I bet he talks shit all the time.
You know? I don't know. Like, we had Colby in camp sometimes, and, like, I remember when he first started fighting. And we was always cordial, but now, you know what I'm saying, like, I don't even talk to him. He goes his way in the gym. We pass each other all the time. Just as awkward.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's talking about my homeboy. He's talking about Tyron. Right, you know what I'm saying? He's dogging him out. Yeah. You know, and
but you also know that he's got to do that.
He's
going to get the fight.
But listen, I'll say this too. Like, even though I know that, I'm still, like, happy for him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy that he was able to get the success he's gotten, whether it was from talking or not. He still won the fights.
He still beat Dos Anjos.
Yeah.
And he beat Dos Anjos convincingly.
Yeah, he beat Maya. He beat Dos Anjos. So he still won.
Yeah.
He talked a lot, and I'm happy for him. But I was just hoping that, you know, it's time to face the music.
Yeah.
You deserve this ass whooping.
Well, I think the UFC offered him Usman, and I think he said no. I think he said he wants to fight Tyron, and they're like, you're not in any position to decide. And even though they had promised him a shot at the title before, Ben Askren said, did you believe Dana White? Askren tweeted to him.
And he's like, I love Ben.
He's the most ruthless when it comes to Twitter.
Yeah.
He's the most ruthless.
He's so honest.
He's hilarious, too.
Check under your skirt, man.
Yeah.
Ben will get you.
It's a great fight, though. Usman and Tyron. I'm not mad at the fight. I do kind of wish that Colby was getting the shot because I want to see that fight, and I don't know if I will ever see that fight. Like, Tyron's mad. He doesn't like Colby.
Yeah.
He doesn't like him. He's angry.
Yeah.
An angry Tyron is a scary human being.
Yeah.
He might be the fastest, hardest-hitting 170-pounder that's ever lived.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is faster than Tyron? Who the fuck hits harder? You look at his fights with Wonderboy, and Wonderboy recognizes one of the greatest strikers in the sport ever. The only person who got hurt in those fights was Wonderboy.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with Darren Till. Darren Till's a motherfucker on the feet. Tyrant shut that shit up quick. Blam! One big right hand drops him, beats the fuck out of him, and chokes the shit out of him.
Well, here's the thing, man, is it, you know it's coming too.
Yep.
Like every, like, you just can't prepare for it.
Yeah, it's so fast.
Yeah, you know it's coming. You're like, here it comes, here it comes. Oh, there it is. Bow! Yeah.
Well, you gotta engage. And the thing about Tyrant too is he's intelligent and patient.
Yeah.
And he'll just hang around on the outside. He'll hang around the outside. Come on. Yeah. I know you want to do this.
Make a mistake.
Yeah, make a mistake.
Make a mistake.
The Wonder Boy fights. Like people are saying, oh, those fights are boring. You have to fight Wonder Boy that way.
Yeah.
How else do you fight him? There's not another way to fight him. If you fight him another way, you're gonna lose.
Yeah.
This is the way to fight him. You have to fight that way. If you don't fight that way, you get fucked up. If you fight the way, you know, the fucking
Jake Ellenberger.
Yeah. Yeah. You get wheel kicked in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. You fight the way Hendricks fought him. You get fucked up. Yeah. You got to fight that way. You got to stay on the outside. You can't give into those feints. And he's going to hit you with them little pity pats and tips and taps because he's trying to tag you and touch you before the big ones come in. Yeah.
And he's elusive and he's clever and he's a lot quicker than you think.
He also bends at the waist like a goddamn cobra.
Yeah, yeah. Woo, woo, yeah. Woo, yeah.
And he's very good at bending at the waist and then coming back with punches.
Yeah.
He's a dangerous fighter. And Woodley fought him the perfect way, and he did it twice.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, that's boring. But that's Wonder Boy. That's what
I know.
It is.
Like, what
you
do
either you be exciting and you get fucked up, or you fight in a cautious, intelligent way, and the fans boo.
See, I don't see Joe. I got you all wrong.
How so?
I thought you hated Tyron.
Why would I hate Tyron?
I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Because like everybody kind of always had
Tyron thinks everybody hates Tyron.
Yeah, maybe we talk. Now
you
we never
go and listen to the shit I've talked about Tyron. It's all positive.
Yeah, we've never actually talked about it, but it just seems like everybody wants to jump on him no matter what.
No,
yeah,
not me. No, I think if he's not the greatest welterweight of all time, he's in the running. Because, like, Matt Hughes, I feel like you have to give legend respect to. Because Matt Hughes was the first.
Yeah.
Matt Hughes was a powerful wrestler that was the first guy to embrace submissions. You look at when Matt Hughes beat George St. Pierre and he hit him with that far side arm bar, that spin to the counter to the Kimura.
Yeah.
That's some high-level shit. That he fucked up Frank Trigg twice, took his back and strangled him. Matt Hughes was the first high-level wrestler, tough as shit, strong as a goddamn gorilla, who embraced submissions and did it in a really intelligent and, you know, effective way. He was like, I feel like he was the first.
Yeah, so you got to give him his props.
He gets legend props.
Yeah.
Then George St. Pierre's number one after that, because George St. Pierre was the fucking full package.
Yeah.
He could do everything. He figured out how to beat everybody, and he beat everybody for a long time. Then there's Woodley. And I feel like I look at Woodley and George St. Pierre, and I feel Woodley matches up very well with George St. Pierre. And I would have loved to see – I think George is still – look, if you look the way George looked against Michael Bisping, he still looks like he's in his prime. And he hasn't – he didn't
– Yeah.
He fought very well in that fight. And I think his submissions are probably even better. The way he took Michael Bisping's back and choked him, like, motherfucker still got it.
Well, he's working with Donaher, so like that guy is a wizard.
Wizard.
So, yeah.
That fight, I'm very curious to see. And I feel like if George really wanted to come back with a big challenge and have a big, gigantic, you know, epic super fight, I feel like Tyron Woodley, A, deserves it, and B, matches up with him very well. I mean, that's a very interesting fight to me. The other interesting fight to me with George is Khabib, if he could really get down 155 pounds, which he says he can. That's super interesting.
Yeah, I'll say. What do you think about George and Ben?
I like that too.
Yeah.
I like that too. I like that. I like Ben against Khabib.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot because Ben is bigger. He's strong as shit, and you don't get better wrestling credentials.
No. Yeah. The problem like with MMA is like you get all these fights, these like fantasy fights that you want to make, but you can't make them.
Yeah.
Because of the politics involved.
But at least everybody's under the roof, right? Like before, it was like when Fedor was over in Pride, like, God damn, I want to get him over here. Yeah. I want to get him over there so bad. But that never happened, you know? And then when he finally made it to Strikeforce, he was kind of, wasn't the same guy anymore. He had some miles on him, long fights, just didn't look physically the same. as he looked like back when he fought like Mirko Krokop or Nogueira. I mean, he was a goddamn destroyer.
Yeah.
I always wanted to see him fight in the UFC. I think he could have been UFC champion. I really do.
Yeah, back in his prime?
Yeah, for sure.
Because he was like the first dude that was really like mauling guys.
Mauling guys.
The way he was mauling them, like with his ground and pound.
Yeah.
And that's something that like, I don't think, with the exception of Khabib, nobody else has actually recreated the type of violence that he put when he got on top of people.
He would hurl himself into you and throw bombs.
Yeah.
He would fuck people up, man. And also could catch submissions in a blink of an eye.
Yeah.
Off his back, even.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, remember when he fought Randleman?
Yeah.
Randleman sent him flying, suplexes him. He lands on his head. He lands like on his neck and his shoulder. And then seconds later, he catches Randleman in a Kimura and finishes him.
Uh-huh. He's like, watch this.
Yeah. Good for you. That's adorable.
Right. Now watch my turn. Yeah. Yeah. Fedor was the man. Like, it sucks. Like, this generation of MMA fans that we have today don't have that type of history.
Yeah.
And they don't know. They don't know, like, the real Fedor. And they see him now in Bellator and just thinking,
you're not getting a chance to see the real Fedor. You're not seeing Fedor from the early days, you know?
Yeah.
He was so good. And he was so fast, too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was just everything. He had the full package. He could smash you standing up. He could submit you on the ground, ground and pound the fuck out of you. He could do everything.
Yeah.
And he was just terrifying because he looked like a robot.
I know.
Just no expression, no emotion.
I was with Jeff Munson when Jeff Munson fought him in Russia.
Mm.
And when Jeff was walking out, it looked like a man walking to his death. I swear to God. And then when they fought, it was the worst beating I've ever seen a human being take.
Yeah, Monson took some beatings too, man.
And he was getting kicked in, like, he broke his femur. He was from leg kicks.
Really?
Yeah, he was getting kicked in the leg so bad and just falling down. And, oh, it was a scary night. I felt so bad for Monson.
Is Monson in Russia now? Doesn't he speak Russian and he wants to be a communist? He does, right?
He does. I'm not sure if that's the term he would use, but he's
socialist.
Marxist, whatever he wants to call himself. But he's in between like Russia, England, and South Florida. He bounces around.
Is he still fighting?
And every so often, I'm like, yeah, I got a weird fight, and I'm fighting in Russia, or I'm fighting in Africa, or like these weird places where they're fighting. Or he like just had like a wrestling match against like Tim Sylvia. Like, he's doing, like, all this weird stuff that no other human being does.
Dude, when he was at the top of the grappling world, he was, like, wrestling a building.
Yeah.
It was like wrestling a building. He was so jacked.
So jacked, and he was so good
at
what he did. Like, he didn't have a diverse skill set, but he'd beat everybody 2-0.
Yeah. You know what he did? He also was one of the first guys to use the north-south choke. But he was so strong. Like, I talked to some Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys, and I was like, is that legit? He's like, I think he just gooned him.
Yeah.
He just grabbed his neck and gooned him.
Yeah.
But then Marcelo Garcia started hitting people with that. And then everybody's like, okay, wait a minute. What's going on here?
Yeah.
What is this guy doing? And then you realize, like, oh, you can, if you just get it in the right way.
Right.
You can north-south choke a real black belt.
Yeah.
You can. Monson was one of the first guys to show that, but he was so big and strong.
But he was just squeezing with his sweaty armpit. But we're right, Marcelo Garcia. In fact, Marcelo Garcia taught me how he did it and how he does it, and he showed me like the finer details of it.
Yeah.
And I was actually working with Hani Yaya yesterday.
That guy can squeeze some necks.
And that guy can squeeze. That guy's got to squeeze. And he was doing it to me yesterday, too. I was like, you got this.
He's weird, too, because you look at his body, you're like, how is that guy a grappler? He doesn't, like, if you look at Monson, you're like, oh, that guy looks like a grappler. Hani Yaya looks like a kid who plays soccer.
Not even. He looks like he's never done anything athletic in his life. Like, he's like, really, he's like flimsy. Just
gets a hold of
his grappling ability, the way he moves. And
I think he's a black belt under Hickson.
Is he really?
If he's either a black belt under Hickson, or he's most certainly coached by Hickson. Because I remember Hickson was with him in some of his early fights. He worked with Hickson. There was some sort of connection between him and Hickson. But his strangles in particular, unbelievable.
I've seen him tap out a lot of good guys in the gym.
I believe it.
A lot of good guys. And it's like, they're just different.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It's not that they're different. They do it right.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and also they develop a skill, like whatever it is. You know, some guys just have a triangle. Just stay the fuck out of his guard. The guy just has a triangle that you just can't get. There's certain guys who just get really proficient at one particular maneuver.
Yeah.
And Hanayaya was like, his chokes were just nasty.
Yeah. So I'm working with him now on some ground and pound stuff to try to incorporate that into.
Is he in South Florida as well?
Yeah, he's in South Florida too. Yeah.
Wow. South Florida. Goddamn hotbed. Now, what do you think about altitude training?
I mean, obviously it has to work, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I tried it. I don't think it worked for me. Maybe I just didn't believe in it at the time, but it has to work because, I mean, I don't know. Maybe everybody does it, so it has to work. Seems like it would work scientifically, right?
Yeah.
Increases red blood cells.
Yeah.
Should work.
It should definitely increase your endurance, but TJ Dillashaw disagrees.
Really?
And he's got incredible endurance.
Yeah.
And, you know, he works with that Calavita guy, and what their take is that your ability to work is compromised when you perform and train at altitude. So even though your body produces more red blood cells, you're not working as hard because you just can't. There's not enough air. So the idea is, I've heard that you should train at sea level, but then sleep at high altitude. And TJ, I believe TJ said that they don't even think that's the case anymore. I think you're better off just with all that air, just for recuperation and just higher work output. Higher work output and heart rate monitoring and making sure that, you know, you're doing like Tabata intervals, things like that, where you recover and making sure that all that's monitored, that it's done scientifically.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's hard to go against TJ because I've never even seen him breathe hard at a fight.
I know, he's incredible.
Yeah, so like it's hard to go against what he's saying. But I kind of like the idea of that, you know. I mean, I'm kind of an old school guy, so I don't really believe in all the bells and whistles and gadgets. Mm-hmm. And I guess what TJ's saying is just work harder.
Yeah. Well, he does a lot of calisthenics, a lot of explosive stuff, a lot of like plyometrics. And you ever see the shit that he does down in the garage?
No.
The guy's name's Calavita, right? Sam? Yeah. And he's apparently, I've never worked with the guy or even talked to him, but massive respect from so many different fighters that train with him. Aaron Pico's down there with them.
Oh, really?
A lot. Yeah. And this guy is just a master of strength and conditioning. Look, they're doing a bunch of this kind of shit. Jumping over strings and bobbing and weaving under them. And I mean, and Calavita's like got them all wearing heart rate monitors. There's no guesswork to the training. The training is all really well thought out, and it's all like mostly that kind of stuff. Plyometrics, box jumps, medicine ball work, that kind of shit. And, you know, I mean, you can't deny that TJ's in phenomenal shape. And that guy never gets fat, never takes time off.
But isn't this in Colorado?
No, it's here now.
Oh, it's here.
Yeah, they have a new gym. They call it the training lab, but the word train has the word rain in it, like Mark Munoz style, like rain gym. So T-R-E-I-N. Yeah. And they put together a gym. And so he's down here now. And Dwayne goes back and forth, you know, from Colorado to here. Dwayne still has a school in Colorado, and he comes back here to train TJ.
So, but who does TJ do work with as far as skill-wise while he's here?
I think Munoz and him are doing wrestling. He's got a bunch of people down there, a bunch of jiu-jitsu people. And then also, like I said, Aaron Pico's down there, who's very high level. A bunch of different guys are training him. And I'm really interested to see how he does at 125, how his body does with that massive weight cut.
I mean, and this is the one thing I like about TJ is that I don't think he's doing it just because he feels like he's going to be better at 125. I think he's doing it because it's a challenge.
Yeah.
Because he's also said he's willing to go up to 145 to fight Max Holloway.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of rooting for him. I'd love to see how he performs at 125.
Yeah. He says he can make it no problem.
Wow, that'd be interesting.
He's so lean. You look at him now. He's leaner than he's ever looked before. I mean, he's shredded now. He looks like he's ready to weigh in now.
Really?
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know how guys look so lean when they're weighing in?
Yeah.
And then they fill up a little bit when they add water? He looks like that now.
Yeah.
I mean, whether or not he's got too little body fat, I mean, is there a point of diminishing returns? You know, that's a big question.
And that's the way I always see it, too. Whenever guys cut too much weight, the returns aren't the same. Like, you're depleting yourself too much. Almost like the same concept is that if you are so concerned about your weight, your output as far as like skill training and physical training isn't the same.
Yeah, look at him there. Shredded. That's yesterday. Shredded. Shredded.
Well,
I mean, look at that. That's ridiculous.
Is he working with somebody on his weight cut, or is it just
I think Calavita works with him on that as well. He works with him with the nutrition. I mean, that guy is supposed to be a real mad scientist. I need to talk to that gentleman and have him in here. But he's, you know, this is in the garage. They got any videos of them training together? Yeah, so his nutritional analysis. Oh, this is what he has?
Yeah.
Set up for it? Oh, he's got an app?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yep.
Jesus. Yeah, become a fat-burning machine. Ooh, I want to be a fat-burning machine.
Virtual training.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how he performs against Cejudo, because Cejudo has a hard time making that weight as well.
Yeah.
Remember?
I mean, I could imagine that.
UFC made him fight at 135 for a bit because he kept missing weight.
I mean, you ever seen the size of his head?
It's a big boy.
He's got a Tito head.
Yeah, he's got a Tito head.
He's got a big head, so.
It takes a good one.
Yeah.
You know, those big-headed dudes. Yeah,
man,
listen.
But he's, you know, for a wrestler, man, like, he can box.
Yeah, well, the Wilson Hayes fight.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and he fought karate style in that.
Yeah.
Like sideways.
Yeah. I mean, but when you can wrestle that good, you can afford to be in any stance you want because you can always just, you know, adjust and revert back to your wrestling position. But
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But I don't know. That's an interesting fight. I'm looking for that's next week. I can't wait to that, man.
That is next week. That's the 19th, right? Yeah.
Are you going out to that?
No, that's Brooklyn. Yeah, that's a ESPN card. I'm not doing that one. I only do North American pay-per-view now. That's it.
Oh, big timing.
Too busy. Yeah.
Shows on the road.
It's that I travel too much as it is, and you know, I don't want to do that. I don't like going to Australia and shit anymore. I love Australia, but that wrecks you for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah.
Now I know you. I know you're busy. I saw you do stand up in Boston.
Yeah, I'm just
when you
too
opened
busy.
For Shop.
Oh, that was right. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun.
I was proud of him, man.
Sean's killing it. He's about to do his special.
Really?
That's why where I'm going to be on the 19th, I'm going to be with him. He's recording his Showtime special down in San Diego.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm like, damn, this. Because he's like, had only done comedy for like a year or something.
2 years now. For 2 years. A little over 2 years.
And I saw him like, it was like a year ago. Maybe maybe a year ago. And he was like doing comedy for a year and he had an hour show.
And it's good.
Yeah, and it was
he's
good.
Funny.
Yeah, and I'm thinking like, you know, I've dabbling in it for a couple years and I got 5 minutes. I got a week five.
He's out there doing it every night though. Yeah, that's the thing. You gotta do it every night. I mean, he's performing with me tonight at the Improv.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta do it every night. It's like it's sort of like you can't be good at jiu-jitsu if you don't have endurance from rolling.
Right.
You gotta roll. Yeah. You gotta do comedy all the time. You gotta get in that mind zone. There's like a hypnosis zone of stand up.
Yeah, that same thing Jim Norton told me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean my whole thing was like I'm not really in love with stand up like that to go out and wanna do it every night.
You gotta love it. It'll grind you. And when you eat shit, like you bombed at the dime bar, you know what that feels like.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Like, not
damn.
A good feeling.
I was like, damn, that shit worked one time. How come that joke worked one time? Now that shit don't work.
Well, Shab treats it like a professional athlete. And this is one of the things I say to young comedians when they say, how is he doing so good so quick? I'm like, listen to me. You lazy fuck. You don't even write. You barely perform. You do like the same 5 minutes over and over again, night after night without any improvements. I go, this guy's treating it like a professional athlete would treat it. That's the difference.
Is that
being a funny guy already, he's funny, having a good mind, and then having discipline. Just discipline where you analyze your shit and you work on it and you get better. It's possible. He's on an accelerated program. The most accelerated. I never heard of anybody doing an hour special 2 years in.
Yeah, that's why I was like, damn, he's killing it.
Killing it.
Yeah, and he's cool too, man. Like he responds to my texts and shit like that. You know what I'm saying? Like you know, some people, you know, they get all high,
big time,
big time and shit.
Yeah,
so
like, no, he's a great guy.
Yeah,
he's like a genuine good person.
Yeah,
you look forward to seeing him succeed.
Yeah, and I like this. Like you said, it was funny, but it was honest. You know, where he's talking about his career and his life is honest, and like a lot of people, you know, aren't willing to be that vulnerable.
Right.
Yeah.
They want to be the cool guy.
Always trying to be too cool.
The cool guy's not funny. It's not funny to be the cool guy.
Yeah.
It's not.
That's why, because LA, man, everybody tries to be the cool guy. How do you get away with that?
All the actors try to be the cool guy, or rappers maybe, actors yeah. and maybe singers and musicians. Maybe they try to be the cool guy, but in comedian world, there's no room for that. You know, people paid money to hear you talk. You better have some funny shit to say.
Yeah.
If you have some funny shit to say, but you don't have any funny shit to say about you, that
yeah.
seems weird. That seems weird.
Yeah. So you got to be kind of self-deprecating.
You gotta open it up. Open up Pandora's box. Let's see this. The zombies. What's in there? What are the demons? Let them out. Let them out. You know, you can only do so many specials before you let the demons out. And you might be able to get away with one special making fun of stuff outside of you, but you have to be able to see everything. If you're going to be a comedian, you're going to keep going. How you're looking at the world, and if how you're looking at the world, none of it is reflecting on you. None of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. And if it's reflecting on you and you're funny, you got to be able to be a fool. You have to be able to be a fool. You have to. Every great comic makes fun of themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I do more improv shit. You know, Matt Sarah always gives me shit for that because I hang out with nerds and fucking improv.
Oh, an improv troupe?
Yeah, yeah, that type of shit. So yeah. I do more of that shit.
Matt Sarah gives you a hard time?
Oh, my God. Oh. Yeah, this is a fucking lemon improv troupe. Yeah, he gives me a hard time with that shit. I ain't gonna lie, man. I'm a theater nerd, man. I hang out with little improv nerds and shit, so I do that. But like, that's why I didn't really dig into stand-up as much. Mm-hmm. I don't know. For some reason, I was just like, man, I don't got time to be going out there fucking every night getting my fucking teeth kicked in by these audiences.
Yeah.
But I know it's necessary, and it's part of the process.
Yeah, but it's not necessary if you don't want to do it. Like, it's not something everybody should do.
Yeah.
You tried it. You didn't like it.
No, and it's not that I don't like it, neither. That's the thing. It's like, I don't mind it.
Right.
Yeah, it's just...
Yeah.
But I feel like if you want to be good at it and get to the next level...
Right.
Then you have to fucking go through that process.
Well, you would say the same thing to a fighter. If you had a fighter that was coming in like, I like to train, but I don't like to train that much. Like, don't. You're not fighting.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
You gotta love this thing. If you want to be a professional fighter, man, you have to have a singular focus. Like, you have to be really driven and dedicated. And the difference between that is, with comedy, yeah, you might get your teeth kicked in, but with fighting, you're going to get your teeth kicked in. Like, really?
Yeah. You're getting really fucking banged up.
And you have to be able to suffer almost every day in order to get yourself in the kind of condition that you need to be in to fight.
Yeah.
You need to have – there's a level of discipline that you need to have to be a professional fighter that's almost unequaled in sports.
Yeah, because, I mean, it can – like that.
Because it's not just discipline. Like, you have to have great discipline if you want to be a runner. You want to be a marathon runner, or great discipline if you want to be a professional football player or professional basketball player. But the difference between fighting is you have to have great discipline, but you also are going to get fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, you're also going to get your face punched in. You're going to get your liver kicked. You know, you're going to get
your limbs pulled off.
Yeah. You're going to get your legs thumped with shins slamming into the meat of your leg where everything goes numb.
Ooh. Don't remind me.
Thump.
I don't do that shit no more. I don't do that shit no more.
Do your legs go back to normal to the point where you don't feel like you could take it anymore?
Yeah,
like,
I can't take kicks no more.
Isn't that a weird thing? Like, you develop like an ability to absorb those. Like, if you watch like Robert Van Roosmalen or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Robin Van Roosmalen, that guy will take a leg kick and it's like doesn't even seem to affect him.
Yeah, but when you stop doing it, you can't go back.
Right.
I mean, do you spar around a little bit?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No, I haven't kickbox sparred in forever.
Yeah.
I just think, like, getting hit in the head should be something that you should decide, okay, no more of that. Like, there should be a time where, like, you could spar jiu-jitsu and you can keep going pretty much forever. I mean, Ilio was sparring when he was in his 90s. He was still rolling.
Yeah.
But striking, it's like, at a certain point in time, you got to stop.
Yeah, I don't do it.
Yeah.
I barely roll, to be honest with you. Like, I just study and study and study the game.
Do you work out?
A little bit. Like, I mean, I still have to roll at times to try.
But do you do other kind of workouts? Do you just strength conditioning or nothing?
Nah, I don't do a lot of strength conditioning.
That happens to a lot of fighters. They stop fighting.
You spend so many years, like, running and doing all this stuff. Like, when you're done, like, the last thing you want to do is run. In fact, like, Tyron Willie, we go to camp, and I say, hey, listen, you got to buy me a bike if you want me to go alongside of you while you're running. I ain't running with your ass.
It's got to be hard for him to run, too, because he's so thick.
Yeah. Yeah, he's. I mean, he hates running, but like, I think that part of that motivates him to go. This motherfucker made me run. I'm mm-hmm. fucking him up.
Yeah,
yeah. So he, but yeah. So
how old's Tyron now? 35.
35, maybe 36.
How many more years do you think he's got left?
He'd be bullshitting. He'd be like, yeah, another 3 years. I don't think so. You know, his rap career about to take off. So
you think so?
I don't know. It could. I mean, you know. I mean, he's the most hustling guy I've ever met.
He's always on TMZ.
He hustles.
He's always doing something.
Yeah, the cat hustles. So
does he have a podcast?
Well, me and him had one together.
But do you have one now?
Yeah, but we don't ever record because he'd be.
What is it? What's it called?
It's the Morning Wood.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard of that before.
Yeah, so, but we ain't recording like a year. So,
oh, well.
Yeah. So he don't really have. Yeah,
inconsistent.
So, yeah. To say the least.
That's the number one thing about podcasts. You got to be consistent.
Well, yeah. So like I do one now with TJ DeSantis called The Beatdown. And like,
okay.
And I'm like, dude, let's record. We got to record. Because yeah. like you said, consistency is key.
To everything.
Yeah.
There's too many out there.
Yeah.
People get bored with you.
Yeah.
If you don't give them, like you got to make them addicted. And the only way to make them addicted is you got to, first of all, be addicted. You got to be enjoying all these conversations because it's the only way that it is that it's contagious. There's no other way. Like if you're half-assing it or faking it, you really don't want to talk to these people.
Yeah.
Then that comes through people's ears. They hear that, you know? Like I always love talking to people. I've always been – like when I was in the brief amount of time I was in college, the only thing that interested me was psychology.
Really?
Yeah, I was interested because I knew my own mind. Like I got into psychology because the same reason why I got into philosophy and because I was scared. I was scared of fighting. I was like, what's wrong with my brain? Like why am I always scared? Like why am I scared before every tournament and scared before all these different things? Like what? And then I realized everybody's scared. Okay, well, how do people manage that? Like what is there a right way to think? Because I knew that sometimes I would go in there with a perfect mindset and I'd win, and I'd feel great, and then I couldn't recreate it like 2 weeks later. I'm like, well, what the fuck is wrong with my head? How do I figure this out? So I always wanted to talk to people and find out like what makes you tick, like what motivates you, how do you discipline yourself, like what are you thinking about when you're pushing yourself, like what are you thinking about when you're calm? Do you spend time reflecting on your work? Do you just keep going and keep doing it, or do you analyze it? Like what is happening with you? Like what do you do? And then so a podcast to me almost came naturally because I'm always talking to people. And I'm always trying to like get behind the doors of the eyes, like what's in there.
But Jim Norton said that about you too. He's like, it's a great conversationalist. And he's blanking and shit.
Blanking. Blanking.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious. I'm like, yeah. I don't want to just talk. I want to hear people. Like sometimes comedians are just waiting for their turn to talk mm-hmm. and they're not listening to you. Like I've always tried very hard to listen to people and trying to like see where they're coming from, trying to get into their head.
So let me ask you this. Did you ever figure it out?
What out?
Why you couldn't manage emotions? Yeah.
I was young, first of all. I stopped fighting when I was 21 or 22, somewhere around that range. So between 21 and 22. There was also no future. That was a problem, too. It wasn't like I was working towards something. When I was fighting, it was, you know, I stopped in 88, 89, I think, maybe. I had my last kickboxing fights. And there was no future. There was nowhere to go. Like kickboxing, you got like $500 for a fight. You get your brains punched in. There was no money in Taekwondo. And then the Olympic scoring system, the Olympics were incredibly corrupt. Like the scoring was terrible. Like especially if you fought a Korean. Oh, good Lord. In Taekwondo,
you're not winning.
You had to beat the living fuck out of them or you had to stop them. You had to KO them. And then I was also seeing brain damage. I was seeing people in the gym with brain damage, especially when I started kickboxing because I was spending a lot of time in boxing gyms. I was seeing guys that were slurring and stuttering their words and they just acted weird. And you see guys that acted different after a KO. They got KO'd, and then you see them just a little bit more distant, a little bit more glassy-eyed and slack-jawed, and you're like, oh, Jesus Christ. Like, you see it.
Yeah. I mean, I hate it, man. It breaks my heart every time I see a guy take unnecessary punishment.
Yeah.
And not even if he's not slurred, just like taking unnecessary punishment.
Because you know where it leads.
I know where it leads. And it really breaks my heart when I see like the fans like expect it from fighters.
Yeah. They, you know, they don't know what they're watching. You know, they're just watching violence. It's almost like it's not really there.
Yeah.
It's not really happening.
Like they don't know what it's like when a guy gets knocked out.
Yeah.
And then, because for them, it's over. They just, you know, they're going back to the regular life.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm going to the hospital with this motherfucker who got knocked out.
Yeah.
And he's got his fucking eyes, you know, busted open and he's all busted up.
Broken
and
I'm just like, orbital bone. Yeah. And, yeah.
And for the next, you know, 3 or 4 months, you know, this guy's depressed because he was trying to cater to the fans and put on this exciting fight.
Yeah.
And yet he done went through all this punishment. And that's just then. Yeah. And then you do that, have a career of that. You're going to be fucked up.
Yeah.
There's yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah. It's just, it's hard when guys don't know how to get out or where to go when they get out. And it's hard when you see them knowing that they have to get out, but they're still fighting.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's the worst, man. I'm always like, damn.
What do you do when you have a fighter that you know should stop?
I'm pretty honest with them. I'm always honest. I'm always like, man, listen. This ain't for you no more. And I always have to tell them, like, if I feel like it's going to affect them physically and hurt them by continuing the fight, I tell them, man, you need to stop. And more often than not, they kind of listen.
They probably kind of know,
yeah,
right?
They kind of know. And they just need somebody else to say it. And, yeah. I'm more willing to tell them. I always try to tell them. But sometimes if they don't want to do it, then I can't really be a part of it.
Like when you saw Tito versus Chuck. Yeah, that's one of the, in my opinion, and no disrespect to Chuck, he should do whatever he wants to do. Maybe he enjoys it. Maybe he wants to compete. But that was one of the worst examples of a guy who used to be a fucking destroyer.
Ugh.
Chuck was a destroyer.
You go watch, he felt like Babalu.
Babalu, yeah.
Oh, oh, man.
Dude. Randleman. KO'd Randleman. KO'd everybody. He was a killer. Chuck was a straight up killer.
I remember watching him fight fucking Pele, Landy, bare knuckle in Brazil.
Yeah, when they had the net in the bottom of the ropes.
He got knocked down with 3 times with head kicks and still fucked Pele up. Yeah, man, that's...
Yeah.
And then to watch him... And then, again, another case and scenario where, like, young fighters see him and go, oh, that's an old guy.
Yeah.
But he shouldn't be fighting.
Yeah, he shouldn't be fighting at 50. And he clearly can't take a punch anymore. Like, whatever it is, like, when Tito connected on him, everything just shut off.
Yeah.
You see it just shut off, and then Tito smashes him.
And we talking about Tito. We're not exactly talking about fucking Anthony Johnson.
That's true, you know? But I think Tito's punches are a lot better than they used to be.
Yeah, I
think Perillo, Jason Perillo is a fantastic coach, and I think he did an amazing job. And I think Tito, you know, he's just not a natural striker. It's not like his thing. He's a wrestler. But it's the way it happened. It just – Chuck couldn't connect. Everything looked – off, his timing, his movement, his balance looked off. And when you talk to people that are neuroscientists and they understand what happens to the brain after repeated brain trauma over and over and over again, and then what we're seeing is just in the cage. We don't have no idea how much brain trauma he took in camps. And it's probably pretty significant.
Yeah, I would assume.
His style was so... He's such a brawler, and he had an iron chin for the beginning of his career. It was just one of the greatest chins of all time. So when it failed him, there was no escape clause. There was no back door. This was the style. The style wasn't all of a sudden you're going to be like Mighty Mouse and not get hit and switch stances and become slick. That shit is just not available. And when you saw him with this hampered movement, he just doesn't – his balance doesn't seem right. Like, I was watching him hit the pads when they were preparing, he's getting ready. I was watching him hit the pads. I was like, what is happening here? Like, his balance looks fucked up. Like, it didn't look right. Like, even when he's throwing kicks, he, like, threw a kick and then fall back. Like, it didn't look right.
Yeah, well, I mean – and I feel that even with myself. Like, I don't have the same balance I had when I was 20.
Right.
And I could imagine him, like, because he probably never even focused on that.
Right. He just did it.
He just was just throwing punches.
Right.
So for him, that, like, I watched a video of him shadow boxing. Horrendous.
It's rough.
Horrendous.
But then you go back and watch him when he was the champ. It's like, Jesus Christ, he's a murderer.
I know.
I watched him hit the bag, and it's like a fucking murderer.
Boom, he had boom, speed, boom, power. Speed, yeah, power.
Yeah. Just everything.
Putting it together.
Yeah. And just that style. The reason why he became such a fan favorite, because you knew Chuck Liddell was coming to kill you.
Yeah.
I mean, he was coming to kill you. And that cage door shut, and they said, let's get it on. He just stepped forward and just looking to smash. And that was his style. And it was the reason why the UFC became so famous. One of the big reasons why the UFC became so popular was Chuck Liddell.
Yep. He was a guy who everybody could identify with.
Yeah.
And the fan base of the UFC saw themselves in Chuck Liddell.
Well, they wished... They wish they could be that guy.
Yeah, yeah, that's like he was. Yeah, he was. Yeah, shave head, the mohawk, the tattoo, the, was fearless.
Yeah,
was knocking people out and would scream afterwards. Yeah, and, yeah, it's like they saw. That's what they saw. They said, "I want to be that guy."
Yeah.
And you're right, and that's how the UFC became so popular so fast. Is with Chuck.
When you see him now at 50 fighting the way he fought against Tito, you're like, oh. It's so hard to watch. But then on the other hand, it's like I don't want to tell the guy what to do. He's not going to live forever. Like, if this is what he really enjoys and he wants to do that, I mean, maybe it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world for him to keep going. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not his dad.
Yeah.
I'm not him. You know, I don't know what to tell him.
I mean, also, you got to think, like, he probably does worse things in his life than than getting in a cage with an old buddy, you know?
You think so?
Probably. I mean, I never hung out with the dude, but I'm just saying.
But you heard stories.
But he, yeah.
Yeah,
well, he ain't hanging out at the church.
He definitely did a share of partying.
Yeah,
which doesn't help.
Yeah,
yeah. Depending upon what you're partying with, too. You know, I'm sure there's certain substances that are worse than others when it comes to your brain.
See, that's why I can't never live in L.A. Stand my ass in Florida.
Well, what's in Florida? It's the cocaine capital of the world.
I know, man, but
not as much ecstasy.
Yeah. I don't know. The party scene just seems it's not the same.
Florida? Fucking Florida? Florida? No. Miami's got to have the craziest party scene on the planet.
Yeah, you can stay away from that, though.
Yeah? Well, you can because of the gym.
Yeah.
And hanging around with the right people. But whenever I'm down in Miami, I'm like, this is the most chaotic place ever.
Yeah, Miami. Like, I never go to Miami. I don't ever go down there.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a fun place. Last time I did a gig there, though, it was right before I was filming my Netflix special. And so we have these Yonder bags. Yonder is a cell phone bag that they use. Well, you have to put your cell phone in this magnetically sealed bag to get into the room. And the only way to use your phone is you got to leave the room. They open the bag for you. They give you your phone. You hold on to your phone the whole time. You have possession of it. But it's sealed in this bag to keep people from texting and filming and all that kind of shit while the show's going on. Every other place, it accentuated the show because it made the show like 10% better because people were just focused. They weren't staring at their phone. They just focused at the show. In Miami, all people kept doing is just getting up to go outside to use their phone. So it was like no one sat down the whole show. They were popping up and moving, popping
it
up.
It just
and
made it worse, huh?
It made it worse. Yeah, it was one of the few places. Like when Tiffany Haddish, she just bombed in Miami, and there was like this big TMZ deal that she bombed there. I'm like... Yeah, in Miami, you got to grab those motherfuckers. Yeah. You got to go, hey, here's the show.
But I tell you, though, South Florida is probably the most unfocused place on earth.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's focused on anything.
On anything.
Nothing.
I say, if you want to starve to death, open a bookstore in Miami.
Yeah. That's true, man. People in Miami, like, they don't have no football team. They got the Dolphins, but they ain't Miami Dolphins.
They don't pay attention.
They don't pay attention. They don't pay attention to the Florida Marlins. They don't pay attention to nothing but having fun and partying. That's all they want to do down there.
And fuck.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's all they do, like on South Beach. That's it. Yeah.
It's great for that.
Yeah.
If that's your sport.
Yeah, but
if you're into dancing and fucking,
Miami is the place to be.
They got great food
in Miami.
Great food. Great food. Yeah, fantastic Cuban
food. Cuban food, yeah. Ooh, yeah, you're right.
There's some great restaurants in Miami, a bunch of great restaurants. Yeah, I mean, it's a great spot. It's just not the best spot for everything.
Like, it's not a great best spot for anything other than,
partying and fucking and banks, and, yeah, apparently. Yeah.
And eating Cuban food.
Yeah. You ever watch those documentaries on cocaine, the Cocaine Cowboys documentary?
No, I've never seen that.
Oh, Dan, you're going to be so happy. You got to watch these.
Why?
Cocaine Cowboys 1 and 2, they are some of the greatest fucking documentaries. And you're going to realize why Miami is so fucking bananas. The amount of cocaine that went through Miami. They say that at one point in time, I don't know if it's still the case, but at one point in time, Miami had more banks per capita than anywhere else in the continent. And it's all because the cocaine money was being laundered through Miami.
Are you serious?
100%. There was one. This is all Billy Corbin's documentary. He's got two documentaries, fantastic documentaries, Cocaine Cowboys 1 and 2. But one of the things that it talked about is 1 year, every single member of the graduating class of the police academy either was murdered or went to jail. Every single member. The entire police academy was corrupt. They were all deeply involved in the drug game. Yeah. Yeah, it was chaos. It was chaos. It was just people were making millions of dollars and burying holes, putting bags of it in their backyard, just digging holes in the backyard and dropping fucking big old sacks of money in there.
Are you serious?
Garbage bags filled with cash. Yeah. Probably still out there. Probably guys died. And there's garbage bags filled with cash that they left in their backyard they forgot about because they got shot. Oh, yeah. It's they're great documentaries, man.
I need to find out where they lived. I'm going digging.
Yeah.
I need a shovel.
Yeah. Just buy some sketchy looking houses and start digging in the backyard. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't know it was that crazy.
So crazy. I didn't know it was that crazy easy until I watched those documentaries. They're so good. Probably if I had a top 10 list of documentaries of all time, Cocaine Cowboys is on there. That good.
No shit.
100% must watch. Yeah, especially if
it's on Netflix, right?
I'm sure. Is it on Netflix? Cocaine Cowboys? Certainly on iTunes. It's so good. You just go, oh my God. It's like you shut up and you don't know about Griselda.
Who's that?
Griselda Blanco. She was this bitch that was, she was running everything back then. It was a woman, an evil woman. Evil woman that was running everything. Murderer. Just a straight killer. Hired all these savages to just gun people down. Babies, women, children, everybody dead, ruthless. Yeah.
So what happened to her? She's still...
She's dead. She went to jail in Colombia, and she got out. They let her out. There was pictures of her with her girlfriend. She it was like sometimes she was a lesbian, sometimes she wasn't. But there was a pictures of her with her girlfriend in Bogota after she got released. Like, that lady is responsible for the death of who knows how many fucking people. Millions of dollars moved around in money. Yeah. Yeah, man. It's fucking the great documentaries.
Great. Oh, shit.
Can't recommend them enough.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I gotta see this.
You gotta see it. Yeah. You're gonna text me afterwards. You're gonna go, oh, shit.
I had no idea that, like, yeah. I mean, I knew Miami was bad. I mean, obviously, like, it's so close to, you know, South America, so I'm sure it's kind of got to be a hub, but I didn't know it was like.
Jennifer Lopez is playing her in a movie, isn't she? That movie came out? No.
Was like maybe they didn't make it,
really,
or maybe not yet.
She's too hot.
Who, Jennifer Lopez?
Yeah,
to play this girl.
Yeah,
this girl wasn't
disgusting.
Hot. Oh, really?
No, she was disgusting.
Well, how is she gonna get to be like
Joey Diaz with a wig on? She was evil, man.
Oh no,
super evil. It's just interesting with a whole crime syndicate run by a woman. You know, because you like see that in the movie. You go, yeah that in the about, movie. Yeah. Get the fuck out of here. No, this is
but
real.
That shit
life.
Happened for real.
Griselda Blanco. Yeah.
Damn, who put her in power, though?
She killed everybody.
In 2016, she was labeled with it, but then 2017, there's articles saying that Catherine Zeta-Jones and her were competing for it.
Oh.
But it's an HBO TV movie that has yet to be made, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Pull up a picture of her, the real Griselda Blanco. I'm telling you too much. You need to watch it. You just need to watch it. Look, there she is right there. Joey Diaz with a wig on.
Yeah, it is.
See? How is that's her with makeup. Imagine what she looks like in the morning when she's taking a shit. Yeah, that was her boyfriend. That
he looked like me a little too. Bit.
Yeah, he got in trouble because he was banging some chicks while she was in the pokey.
Can you blame him?
Nope. Nope, look at her.
Evil.
Damn.
Bro. Evil.
Evil. They talk to her hitman. Her hitman gets interviewed in the movie from jail and, like, you know, talk about, like, what the rules were and how she ran things. The amount of money that those people made, it's just ungodly sums of money. And nobody knew how to get out. It was like once that money's flowing and, you know, you're making $30 million a week or whatever the fuck you're making, like, when do you get out? When do you get out? How do you get out?
Yeah, you can't get out of that.
And if you do get out, like, who takes over?
Yeah.
Who takes over distribution? And then everybody, I think, probably just says, next year.
Next year. This is my last year doing this.
And then catch bullets.
The only way out is death.
Yeah. I have a friend, a very good friend, my friend Steve Graham, who did his he's an ophthalmologist. He did his residency in Miami and was doing his residency in the emergency room in Miami while the cocaine days were going on. He said every day, just blown up heads and bullet holes. Cocaine Godmother did. Review.
Turns out they made it.
Brown face casting is just one of many insults in the schlocky narcos ripoff. What? Oh, that lifetime. Is brown face. That's a look at that. That lady's supposed to be Griselda Blanco.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Ah! That's not Catherine Zeta-Jones, is it?
Yeah.
Boy, it doesn't look like her at all. Does it?
Yeah, but it doesn't look like the lady at all.
At all. You didn't even get fat.
Come no. on.
You didn't even get fat? Come on, man. That's the difference between her and what's her face from who was in Monster.
Oh, that's my girl.
Charlize Theron. Yeah, she got fat. Yeah, she did it the right way.
Uh-huh.
She played that lady the right way. Wrecked her body.
Called Cocaine Godmother.
Yeah! That was a Lifetime movie? D. Shouldn't even give it a D. How'd you not give it an F?
Anything on a Lifetime is a D or an F at least.
But I think Catherine Zeta-Jones is Latina, so that's kind of fucked up that they said they whitewashed her. Because isn't she? Isn't Catherine Zeta-Jones from Colombia? I don't know. She's also apparently losing her marbles.
Really?
Yeah. I read that.
See, I don't know about this Hollywood shit, man. That shit scares me, man.
I don't know about it either.
What? Get out of here,
I'm
man.
I'm on the outside.
I noticed that. I'm like, man, this is off in the cut a little bit.
She's Welsh.
Welsh. Oh, sorry. Oh. Sorry.
From the United Kingdom.
My apologies. Yeah, they whitewashed the shit out of her. Yeah, how could you not give that role to a fat Mexican lady? How could you not?
Or
a Colombian lady. Yeah. Find a fat lady.
Yeah, why not?
Didn't work anyway. Yeah. Here's what you do. You have some stars. You put them in supporting positions.
Yeah, and have her play the role.
Yeah.
I mean, go to Telemundo, that channel. They got many of them on there.
Catherine Zeta-Jones is Welsh?
That don't even make no sense.
I thought she was like Latina. Like Columbia. She was so hot when she was young.
She's still married to old boy. What's his name?
Yeah.
Michael Douglas. Yeah,
look at that. Kabow! Come on, tell me she doesn't look like Colombian or something. She does, right?
Yeah.
Well, what you gonna do? Yeah. Whitewash. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. You can't do that anymore. That's cultural appropriation, son.
What's wrong with that?
Can't do it.
Yeah.
Can't do it. Right?
No.
No.
Well, no. Listen, anything that offends people, man, you need to stay away from it.
Just because it's too much work?
Yeah, it's just too much work, man. It is. It's just too much work. Like, for me, that's how I feel about it. Like, man, I don't even say that.
Yeah,
it's just too much work.
It's like talking to people about politics. Like,
yeah, I'm done. I'm not talking about this
shit.
Not
interested.
And I'm not in a position to tell anybody what can offend them. And, you know, snowflake, I'm not going to do that. I ain't calling nobody a snowflake because, listen, something's going to offend somebody, but it's just too much work.
It's too much work. There's too much, especially for someone like you. You're busy.
Yeah, I ain't got time for that shit.
You got shit to do. You don't want to be arguing with people all day on Twitter.
Oh.
About foreign policy.
Oh, man. I try to stay off of Twitter, man. And sometimes I'll be in the middle of writing a tweet, and I go, I ain't even sending this shit.
Yeah, good for you, man. Good for you. I'm more friends than not. Bert Kreischer just deleted his shit. He deleted his shit off his phone. He deleted the app. Yeah.
What app?
Twitter
app. Yeah, I don't
a lot of people are doing that now. I know a lot of people are deleting Twitter and they just don't read it anymore, don't pay attention to it anymore. I go in every now and then, but the way I describe it, it's always like peering into a haunted house. Like,
yeah,
the fuck's going on there?
Well, the problem is it puts everybody on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
So like you the shit. You know what I'm saying? You work your hardest to get something, and then you let these fucking guys just sign in and talk shit to you.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
They don't do nothing. They don't do nothing in life but get on, sign their name in, and just talk shit.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of that. Sometimes someone will talk shit to me, and I'm like, who's this guy? I'm like, what is going on with this guy's life? And then I don't get upset, but I will click their profile, and then I look, oh, they just talk shit to celebrities. Look,
yeah, that's what they do. They talk shit
to Nas and Jay-Z and fucking, you know.
But it's horrible. This guy, I mean, and that it's guy. So... Sometimes you just like I see what's his name, your boy Chris D'Elia, right?
That's Chris D'Elia,
Chris D'Elia. Like he'd be on that roasting people,
shit.
Yeah,
he loves it.
He'd be on. It's like,
but he's bored.
Is that what it is?
He doesn't do anything. This is what Chris does: writes jokes, goes to gym, talks shit online all day. He's like making little funny videos, and like he just can't wait to do stand up. He just wishes comedy clubs were operating at noon.
Really?
Yeah. Talia loves doing stand-up. If comedy clubs were open at noon, he's at the store like almost every night of the week. He just can't wait to go stand-up again. Can't wait to go up there and kill. Just the most fun.
Really?
Yeah, so when he's not doing that, he's talking shit to Logan Paul and fucking this guy and that guy. Anybody, so, and he's good, too. So anybody says anything, he'll crush you.
Yeah, he'll crush you. I watch him embarrass Logan Paul. I felt so, I didn't feel bad for Logan Paul, but I was just like, dude.
He'll hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
D'Elia will hurt your feelings.
He's so good at that. But like, I'm thinking, like, man, don't you got anything else to do?
He doesn't.
Throughout the day?
He, no, he doesn't. He doesn't read. He's not doing anything. He's not interested in like bettering himself. At all. He doesn't care. I mean, that's just who he is. He just likes being funny, and he likes talking shit. Like, if you look at his videos, like, he puts videos up on Instagram, they're just funny. They're just him being fucking ridiculous. Him being silly. I mean, What's he got going on here? What's he doing here?
Talking shit about the Coachella
lineup. Let me hear it.
It's very short. Let me
see. Okay, let me hear this.
Bro, the names of the people and the bands playing in Coachella this year are fucking dumb!
That's the whole video? That's it? That's so silly.
I retweeted a lot. People were just like, this is the perfect way to say
Is it that bad? What is going on with just Coachella? Bad. Is it bad?
Sure. I don't know. Sure.
What are the names?
I mean, it's just a lot of the arguments people are making. It's just like an Instagram concert. People are just going to have pictures pulled up.
There's always a lot of that, right?
Also, someone now.
Coachella lineup. What do we got here? Who do we got? Childish Gambino. Can't go wrong there. Who are these other people? I don't know who these people are. Kid Cudi, Weezer. I'm trying to see people that I recognize. Ariana Grande. What? I would be really mad if I was DJ Khaled and I saw Ariana Grande's name so much bigger than mine.
Oh, that's Khalid.
That's a different one. That's a different one.
He's a different guy?
Yeah. He's a singer.
How do you have the same name as the other guy?
Because the other one was a DJ. He's like a Cuban DJ.
Ah, get on with yourself. Who's Boy Paulo? Pablo. Boy Pablo. Way down there. Tiny little name. And then this dude's smaller name than him. Who's Razor Bumps?
Oof. I think that's part of what he's maybe laughing at. I don't
know. Razor Bumps is that's what you get when you shave your pussy. Don't make that as a name. That's ridiculous.
There's U.S. Girls and Men I Trust. They're both also there.
Social House? Okay, no disrespect to any of these bands. I'm sure they're really good. But yeah, Chris is right.
Hop Along. Super Organism.
Oh, Super Organism. They're working again? What? Serpent with Feet? Okay, shut this off before I become Chris D'Elia.
Hey, that's music today, man. Everybody can come out with music these days.
A lot of musicians. I'm not in that business. I don't understand it. I have them on here. I don't know how they do it. I'm like, I don't know what you're doing.
But you have them on here all the time?
Yeah,
musicians
all the time. But I'm like, that world is just such a difficult. See, it's so difficult to break through. Like, it seems like the most difficult world to break through.
Because of the competition.
Everybody thinks they can do it. There's a lot of competition, especially rappers. You don't have to hold a note. All you have to do is just make shit rhyme.
Yeah. And you don't even really have to do that.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
No, you can mumble your way through things.
Yeah. You're right. Like, the rap industry.
God.
Like, at least in fighting, you can win and keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fighting, you just fuck people up.
Yeah.
And if you fuck everybody up, you win.
Yeah, you win, and you're going to be the greatest ever.
Nobody has to like you.
Yeah. Once
they lock that cage door shut, you just fuck that person up. I'm sorry I didn't you, but I fucked your boy up.
Cut and dry. That's what it is. And rap or music industry, it's like,
yeah,
I'm the best.
Yeah.
I guess there's
a lot of biting, a lot of stealing, stealing raps and stealing rhymes, and there's a lot of that in that world, too. It's rough.
Well, in comedy, if people are laughing, then you keep going then, right?
That,
I suppose.
Yeah. But also, in comedy, there's so many places to work. Like, there's so many comedy clubs. There's so many comedy clubs.
Oh, really?
So you can
work a lot as a comedian?
Yeah. You can work every night. You might not get booked as a beginner, but once you get going, and once, like, you name a guy who's a good comic, like Adam Hunter, perfect example, good comic. That guy works everywhere.
Yeah, he's always working.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
He's always got something going on. And if he was a rapper, he would be fucked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, if you're that level rapper, like, there's not a lot of options for you.
Yeah.
Like, where are you going to work? There's no rap club. I'm going to go to the rap club, do a 5-minute set. That shit's not real.
You're right. Yeah. But comedy, yeah, I guess. Yeah. I thought it was kind of hard to get put on, though. Like, as a.
It's not, well, not for Adam, obviously, because he's pretty successful. But in the beginning, there's plenty of little tiny places and bringer shows where you do, like, you know, a couple minutes. And then once you're good, comedy, one thing about comedians, they help each other.
Yeah.
Like,
really?
Yeah.
I heard it was like the opposite.
Where'd you hear that? Well, from Norton?
No. Jim didn't tell me that. He said.
It's different in New York.
Yeah. There's some comedians. They get jealous of other ones that are successful.
Yeah, those are the ones that suck.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
The good ones support other ones that are good because you realize you need them. It's almost like you need, if you're in a gym, you need guys that are really good around you to push you.
Good training partners.
You need that with comedy, too.
Yeah.
You need other comedians who are really good. It elevates your idea of what's good.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, in general, comedians are probably one of the more supportive of all art forms. One of the most supportive of other people that are doing it.
I would hope so, because it's such a world where it should be comedian against the audience, it seems like. So, like, you kind of need people to support you and have your back and go, man, don't worry about that one. Let's do it
also
again.
As long as no one's stealing from you, when they're on stage, you're not. So it shouldn't affect you at all.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you probably got into comedy because you're a fan of comedy. That's how I got into it. So if I didn't enjoy other people that were really good at it, like, what? I took away the one thing that I really loved to watch, and then I started doing it for a living. Now I can't enjoy it anymore? That's crazy. And the only way you enjoy it is you got to appreciate something that's really good. You can't be seeing someone go, ain't that good.
Yeah.
I could be better. So I wish I was up there. I'll fuck that crowd up.
So do you still go watch sometimes? Like, you watch your homeboys?
Yes. I watch my friends. Yeah, all the time. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why. If I go on the road, I always bring really funny people with me. I want to laugh. I want to laugh before I go up. Some comedians don't want that, though. They want the audience to be suffering until they get up. They'll bring terrible opening acts.
What?
Yeah.
That seems like a terrible idea.
I agree. But see, you're coming at it from a martial arts perspective. Like, martial artists, martial artists, first of all, everybody supports everybody. Everybody helps everybody. You have to. You're training together. You're working with – there's coaching. There's, like, you're advancing each other. You appreciate it. When someone fucks somebody up, like, you realize, like, damn, the guy's good. This is good. There's, like, a lot of props. Like, if you see, like, a comedy special, you'll see a bunch of comedians tweeting about how good a comedy special is. I don't think you see that much in the rap world, where someone is really good and then a bunch of other rappers will chime in about how great that thing was.
Yeah, you won't. Yeah, you're right. You're right about that.
But with fighters, you do.
Yeah.
If somebody fucks somebody up and, like, some big, like, damn, he looked good tonight. Yeah. They look good. And you'll see all this chatter, all the people supporting it.
Yeah. Rap is the opposite.
Yeah. Fuck everybody.
Yeah,
fuck the
world. I'll rap that motherfucker.
Yeah.
Drug game, yeah.
That's the weird one, right?
The drug game.
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't know, man. Do you anticipate staying in South Florida?
I don't know. I mean, so I don't know if they have it on.
Where are you from?
Originally from Delaware.
Oh,
yeah.
So nobody's from Delaware.
I know. I'm the only one. I made it out.
The only person.
Yeah.
Ever escaped.
I didn't even remember
it was a state. Yeah. You brought it up.
You know, here's an interesting fact. Me and Roxanne Matafari was born in the same hospital.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
What are the odds?
I know. But I'm originally from Delaware, so eventually I feel like I want to be a snowbird.
Yeah?
Meaning, you know, hang out in Florida during the winter months, yeah.
And where will you live in the other time?
I don't know. I might go Pennsylvania, Jersey, or some shit.
Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Like Philly?
Yeah, that's where my folks is from.
Really?
Yeah.
Philly's nice. Yeah. I love Philly. Philly's real.
Yeah, you know, Philly's like a real city, yeah.
I said they're really intelligent people that will punch you in the face.
Yeah, that's Philly.
Yeah.
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 They're wild. People in Philly are wild. Yeah, they're real and they're passionate and they're wild.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to like that.
And they're better looking than Boston. Sorry, Boston.
Really?
Girls are better looking than Philly.
Why is that?
I don't know.
It's too smart and fucking Boston.
I grew up in Boston.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I think Boston is dealing with a lot of the original genes of the original travelers that made it across that boat. just savage folk that didn't want to live in Europe anymore.
Yeah.
Those genes are not the best genes. Bunch of animals.
Barbarians. So they're still dealing with them fucking genes?
Still punching each other. And a lot of fist fights in Boston.
Yeah.
You go out on a Friday, Saturday night and go around the bars, you'll see plenty of fist fights in Boston. That's one of the few places in the world where people still, like on a regular basis, beat the shit out of each other on the streets.
That's good then, you know? At least they ain't shooting.
Drunken savages. Well, there's some shootings too, for sure. But there's a lot of knuckling down.
Yeah. That's kind of good. But I think there's something to that gene hold gene thing. When I was in Milwaukee and I was like, damn, why are these fucking people so ugly? It's true.
Got those old genes.
Yeah, yo. Like, damn, y'all need to get some mixing going on. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the reason why California has some of the best looking genes. Because the people that lived on the East Coast were like, I got to get the fuck out of here. They kept going until they got to California and they hit that water and went, I don't want to live in Hawaii. Fuck.
Yeah.
Stay here.
And then just the breeding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's also the entertainment business. All the pretty people from Cincinnati, they got on a bus. And
they came out here. Yeah.
I'm going to make it. Look at these cheeks.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it.
How many of them make it?
Very, 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 very few.
It's almost not even worth it.
Almost not even worth it unless you make it. Then you're like, look at me, bitch. Dad, dad, dad. Who won? Yeah. I did. That's right. You got a fistful of cash, throwing them up in the air, making Instagram videos, rolling around on your silk sheets filled with $100 bills. Like,
I almost feel like it's, especially in, like, in the age we live in now, it's better to just stay where you're at and put shit out.
Online. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but I think people are still caught up in the mystique of, like, coming to Hollywood, making it in Hollywood. Even people that do big things online, they still want to do, like, legitimate things. Like, I'd love to do movies.
You know, I'd love to do TV.
They want to do things that pay them less money than they do being a YouTube star.
Yeah. Really?
YouTube pays a lot of money now. Like, if you're a big, like, Logan Paul type dude,
he makes
a shitload of money on YouTube.
How, though? Like, who fucking pays him? Like, who signs his check?
Advertisements. So,
like, selling advertisements.
Puts these videos on. The videos get millions and millions of hits, and he gets millions of dollars from advertisement revenue. Probably more money than most successful sitcom people.
God.
Yeah. If you think of, like, someone who's on a successful television show, you think, well, that guy's got to be balling. I bet Logan Paul makes twice as much money as those people.
Fuck.
I know. Crazy. And then there's people like PewDiePie. How much does that guy make? He's got like 77 million subscribers. So the only thing about that guy is he likes to say controversial shit and he gets in trouble. And then sometimes they pull ads off of him and stuff like that. But I think if you're one of those, like Ninja, is he another one, that video game guy, those people make outrageous sums of money. Outrageous sums of money, like playing video games and talking shit.
Yeah, I saw it was like this little kid. It was like a 7-year-old made like $20 million or something like that.
Doing toys.
Yeah.
Ryan's Toy Review. That's the kid.
Is that him?
He made $22 million in 2018 by reviewing toys.
This little Asian kid right here?
That little kid right there. How much do you think the parents let him keep? I'd tell my parents to suck my dick.
Hell
get the fuck out of my room.
Yeah, I would get out.
You clean my room. Yeah. Set up that fucking video and you clean my room.
This motherfucker just raised up a wiffle ball.
Jake Paul, 21 million. See, look at that. 21 million just by talking. He had a Disney show for a while. He was on a Disney show that my kids watch. And then he decided, fuck that. I'd rather just be in my house. What does it say on his wall? Team 10. Paul?
Team 10. That's his
Team 10?
Squad.
He like painted that on his wall? He's got a mansion. He's got all fucked up inside.
He's got one of those Lego installations too that some guy came in and put Legos all on his wall.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So who's number three? Let's see.
This is a group of guys. Dude Perfect.
Dude Perfect.
They make like...
Five-man sports crew.
Chefs.
I've seen those guys. Like, they do stuff with bows and arrow.
They just all kinds of things. They've been doing it for a few years, so they kind of like... they've been burning down like any kind of chick shot you can think of.
So they made $20 million, all five of them.
Yeah.
So $5 million bucks each. It's nothing to sneeze at. And then what else?
And then this guy's a solo like
Dan
video game.
TDM.
Yeah.
And he made $18 million. Holla / Ballin. That guy can go anywhere. Oh, Jeffree Star. Is that a guy or a girl?
Let's see.
Jeff, makeup star.
Yeah.
Makeup artist since the MySpace era has reinvented himself as a beauty mogul. Wait a minute. You say himself. Are you misgendering him?
I didn't say that.
This article misgendered. I think that's whatever that is. What's this one? Markiplier 17. Nobody ever see that guy before. That guy could go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, he made $17 million.
I don't know what that
Vanos
is.
Gaming. Canadian gamer Evan Fong plays mainstream titles like the Call of Duty. He plays games. Yeah. $17
million.
It's another one. It's, man. Another one.
Yeah.
$16 million. Look at this guy.
There's
hanging out.
PewDiePie.
Damn, PewDiePie's way
who
down
is,
there.
Yeah, who is this PewDiePie? Like, you mentioned him before. I never heard
he's
of him.
He's another guy that just, he's a famous guy. I don't know too much about him. I never watched him.
The most followed on YouTube.
The most followed. 72.5 million followers. I think the reason why he makes less money is because of the advertisers have abandoned him because he dropped some M-bombs.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. What does it say up there? What does it say about his, below there. Swedish gamer, the most followed. Yeah, a backlash last year, rash of anti-Semitic videos. That's right. Anti-Semitic. He said he, but it was like he was joking around and he like was making fun of anti-Semitic people while he was wearing a Hitler outfit, right?
Something like that, yeah.
And they're like, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of bad taste. But again, too much work.
I think he paid some people like to make a Fiverr video putting up signs that they didn't know what they said and they just did it.
Does that too. Yeah, well, anyway, point being, you're right. They can make a shitload of money just being on YouTube and on Twitch playing video games.
God,
I know. That's real. That's like if you're a CEO of a gigantic fucking corporation, you work 15 hours a day, you'd be super happy to make what these assholes make.
I mean, these are just fucking like, you're like, you're right. Like, with the exception of the little kid, I'm gonna give him a pass, but the rest of them dudes are just assholes on YouTube making money.
I mean, I think you have to be an asshole to get attention too. I mean, that's like part of the thing. You got to be. What is Miranda Sings? Is she in that list?
So this was just the top 10.
Oh, okay. She's not in the top 10
this year or something.
But I mean, there's probably like 100 people that make $7 million.
Oh, I know.
Crazy.
I
mean, shit, just give so me much money.
Just break me up. That's why I got my online project coming out.
TrainBJJOnline.com.
Yeah.
Nice.
Doing jiu-jitsu shit.
And your TrainBJJOnline.com, is that it's like from white belt to black belt? Like you learn
curriculum? No, not even like that. Like, because I don't really care about belts.
Okay.
To be honest with you. I care about being effective. Mm. And you know as much as I do, like, jiu-jitsu for MMA is different for, like, competition.
Sure.
Very different.
Yeah.
So, like, that's what I'm focusing on. You know, the differences.
Mm-hmm.
And to make the shit work again. Because I think a lot of people are doing jiu-jitsu wrong for MMA. I think they're using it wrong.
How so?
You know, like, because when you talk about, like, jiu-jitsu, the way it's been played recently, it's like, the way jiu-jitsu played in competition, but all about getting points.
Mm-hmm.
Passing guard,
right.
Getting the back, put the hooks in. That shit don't work in MMA.
Right, for points.
Yeah, they're playing it for points.
Right.
So I've created and developed a bunch of positions to we fuck people up. We hurt people and then submit them.
Mm.
That's the key. Use your jiu-jitsu to hurt people, then submit them.
When you say use it to hurt people, you mean use it to maintain a position and land strikes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Punching people.
And then submit them soften them up a little bit.
Yeah. So like the mentality of it is different. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not, cause like think about it, Joe. Like if me and you were doing jiu-jitsu right now, like in order for me to pass your guard, it would take me fucking 10 minutes, you know? You got 5 minutes to do this shit.
So right.
I'm not trying to pass your guard.
Right.
I'm trying to punch you.
Yeah. And also the other thing about it is like there's certain positions where you really just can't get away with if someone's punching.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Like, especially the bottom game.
Unrealistic.
Like, bottom game has suffered tremendously because it hasn't evolved. Like, jiu-jitsu hasn't evolved from the bottom. And, like, that's something, like I said, when I stopped competing, I studied, and said, what works, what doesn't work. And now I figured out, like, all these different systems.
I think that jiu-jitsu has evolved from the bottom in high-level jiu-jitsu competitions. We just haven't seen as much of it in MMA.
Yeah. For competition, like, jiu-jitsu is as great as it's ever been. It's beautiful to watch. Like, the way these guys move, you know, watching Keenan Cornelius, like, slither on the floor, it's fucking beautiful. But he would do okay in MMA, but, like, most, like, just theoretically, most guys wouldn't.
I think Gary Tonin's going to do very well. He's doing well already.
Yeah, yeah, I think
he's
so,
he's fighting in one FC, but I think Gary Tonin has such a high-level ground game, particularly with his leg locks.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he could do everything. You take your back, armbar you, whatever you need. And he's making his way through the ranks at one. I'm very excited about one.
Yeah, me too.
I like one FC. I'm a big fan.
Well, you know, Gary Tonin, like, he can't, I don't know if he wrestled before, but he has, like, a wrestler's mentality mm-hmm. when it comes to jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Like, he's very aggressive.
Yep.
And he's, like, he's fearless. You know, he's fucking on the money. So, yeah. I like his chances against anybody.
Yeah. I like his chances to be a world champion.
Yeah, me too.
In MMA, in any organization.
Yeah.
And, but I think on the ground, like, he's so far above almost everybody else he's going to face.
I know.
You know? Especially when it comes to the leg lock game. His leg locks are just, that whole Danaher death squad, you know? They're raising some fucking killers over
and
there.
And I'm studying that shit now because I think there's a place for it. And I think that in MMA, people say, oh, that shit don't work. So you just don't get punched in the face. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm like, because MMA guys don't really know how to do it right.
Right.
They're not doing it right.
True.
They're just swinging a leg around trying to squeeze. Mm-hmm. They're not doing it right.
Right. Well, even Paul Harris, you know, when they were talking about Gary Tonin was going to face Paul Harris is so much bigger and so much stronger than Gary Tonin. And Gary Tonin still threatened the fuck out of him. Had him in some real bad spots. And, you know, they went to a draw.
It was a draw, but yeah. Like if there were points here. I mean, if you were to see who won.
Points.
Yeah. You know,
well, first of all, they're not the same size.
Right.
I mean, what is Gary fighting in 1FC? 155?
Probably.
Yeah.
Paul Harris is
200 pounds. Yeah. He's a gorilla.
Yeah.
And he's on every Mexican supplement that's ever been invented.
He's like, with a little pit bull on.
Yeah, Novitski would come to him with like a fucking paper towel and just wipe his. we got everything on this towel. Every metabolite that's ever existed. Yeah, he's a gigantic guy. But they were saying that his leg game, even though it's effective in terms of MMA, like his transitions and his entries, they're very limited and they're obvious. And they were seeing him coming, and he showed it. Then they competed against him.
Yeah. Nah, but I like Gary Tonin. I think he's going to do wonderful over there. I mean, it'll be interesting to see him fight. Obviously, Eddie Alvarez. They're probably in the same division, so like it'll be interesting to see that.
Yes, very, very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, Eddie Alvarez going over there is huge. Mighty Mouse going over there is huge. You know, Brandon Vera is the heavyweight champion now. You know, Brandon Vera is fucking people up over
there. Is he?
Yes.
Yeah. That's under the radar because you don't really hear much about him being over there fighting.
It seems like someone he knows been south of the border as well. He's about 240 pounds really? Now. Oh, my God. He's so jacked. You never seen Brandon Vera now?
I haven't seen him in years.
Dude.
I didn't even know he was fighting over
he's
there.
He's smashing people.
Yeah.
Smashing people. And he's like 240 plus pounds now.
No shit.
Giant neck, fucking traps, jacked as fuck.
Is he still training at Alliance down in San Diego?
I believe so. Yeah.
But I tell you what, man, like you were saying that leg lock game, like Ryan Hall has the ability to beat anybody in the featherweight division.
Yeah, if he catches a hold of a limb,
you
got a real problem.
Yeah. I think he'd beat Holloway the same as he'd beat anybody else. Now, I'm not saying he can beat him, but I'm just saying like if he gets a hold of that damn leg, he could tap anybody.
That's his level of jiu-jitsu, his understanding, his technique, his skill level is very, very, very high, like world championship caliber high.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a bunch of guys. Look at that. That's Brandon Vera now. Jacked. He's jacked, dude. Show me. Yeah, look at that.
Remember, like when he was in the UFC, he was skinny and slim.
Well, he's fighting 205 and heavyweight in the UFC. Now he's just heavyweight. And so he just packed on some meat. Put a video of like, there's a Brandon Vera highlight KO video out there. But he's fucking people up over there, man. Let's see something. Just that one that's on the top. Oh, there we go. The truth. Brandon Vera highlights. Mr. Freak Z's 75, whatever the fuck that is. Whoever the gentleman is, put together this highlight reel. It says, The Truth, Brandon Vera highlights February 1 Championships highlight contest. Let me see some fighting parts.
Training.
Is it all? It is. No, here we go. Boom. And Brandon Vera always had like very high level striking.
Yeah, he was always crisp.
Yeah. And they see the 1FC, you can head kick, and you can kick people apparently in the back of the head, which is kind of fucked up. I don't know what the competition is like in the heavyweight division at 1FC, like what level it is, but I imagine with the size of the organization, about how big it is, that the competition is going to continue to rise in all weight classes. Right now, like in terms of the number of people that are watching, it rivals the UFC.
Does it really?
It's giant in Asia. Giant. But I think it's going to continue. They're making a lot of money.
They're throwing a lot of money
at elite fighters.
I'm hoping they bring some more, because they don't really have a strong American presence.
Well, I think they're signaling by having Eddie Alvarez come over there. Misha Tate is running shit over there now, too, as well as Rich Franklin. He's running things. I think he's the vice president there now. A lot of shit happening over there. We need it, man. We need another Pride. We need something like that.
Yeah, we do. Listen, I'm all for it because I hate... You know, I work with a lot of guys, and I hate when they fucking don't have nowhere to work.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And like if we only rely on the UFC, and we all know how that is. It could, one bad performance means you're out. So,
or a bad judging, right?
Yeah.
What did you think about the PFL?
I love the PFL.
Yeah,
I love it. I love the structure. What's his name? Sean O'Connell said something very interesting, just off the top. But he said, "I just made $1 million, and all I had to do was win." And he repeated it. All I had to do was win. So to me, I was like, I guess he was just saying, like, he didn't have to be a character. And this is coming from probably the only character in PFL.
Right.
And he said that because, like, none of them other guys could fucking do that shit, you know. But
Who was watching?
I don't think anybody was.
That's the thing.
That's the problem. Yeah.
I was surprised he beat Vinny.
Me too. Like,
I thought Vinny was going to win the whole thing.
I thought so too. But but then when I thought about it, I said, damn, he's been training with Jeremy Horn his whole career. And Jeremy Horn is a wizard, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But I trained a couple of the Russians for the PFL. Magomed, he won the welterweight against Ray Cooper III.
Yeah, Ray Cooper's a fucking beast.
I know.
5'7".
I know.
170 pounds, throwing bricks.
I know.
When he fought Jake Shields and beat him twice like that, stopped him twice. I was like, Jesus, state championship wrestler.
I know. I didn't think he was, because my guy took him down early, and I was kind of surprised that he took him down as early as he did, because he is a state champ, but.
He seems small for the division.
Yeah, he could probably fight at 155.
Yeah, just got to
have a little more success.
Yeah. But I like the fact that at least these guys have an option, a place they can win $1 million. Yeah.
And then, and that's in the finals, like leading up to it, they're still making good money.
Yeah.
Like the loser made 250, and then like.
How do they get eyeballs though?
I don't know. That's the problem.
That is the problem, right? That's the problem with everything. I mean, even with Bellator, I mean, the way they got eyeballs was to have like Royce Gracie fight. I mean, that's the way they get eyeballs. They have to have someone who's got a name. You know, I mean, that's the reason why they brought over Tito and Chael and all these, you know. It's hard.
And that's what I was saying. Like, Sean O'Connell, like, if you ever hear him talk, like, he's very charismatic and charming. And he's the only person who probably can handle himself on a mic.
Isn't he a radio guy?
I think so.
Yeah. And, I think he's got a radio. I think he's a sports radio guy.
And for him to say, all I had to do was win, you know, implying that he didn't have to talk. Like, what does that say for... You know, Natan Schultz, who won the lightweight, who can't speak. You know, I don't know. I can't imagine where they go in 3 years, because they're not going to have many stars.
Well, it seems like, what does it say? 2018 ONE Championship registered an average of 11 million viewers per live event across its core markets, according to Nielsen. That's a lot of fucking people. 2015, this figure was less than one. Oh, pop-up ads got us. Son of a bitch. 2015, this figure was less than 1 million viewers per live event. So in 3 years, they went from less than 1 million viewers per live event to 11 million viewers per live event. That's fucking amazing. Of course, across its core markets.
The article is comparing it to NBA viewership in Asia.
Dramatic increase in TV viewership. Fantastic. Can't be more happy. Hope they keep growing. I hope they develop like real legit stars. And also, they have legit world championships across every combat sport over there. They've got Yadsin Kalai is doing Muay Thai over there.
I saw that. Yeah.
Nikki Holtzkin is doing kickboxing over there.
I saw that.
Yeah. They're bringing in world beaters in basically every discipline.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I mean, you know, we both have our affiliation with the UFC, but like without these other organizations, the game don't last.
Exactly.
Yeah, the game can't last.
Exactly. It's so critical. It's so critical that there's more opportunities. And then also, it raises the level of the UFC as well. It raises everybody.
Yeah.
The rising tide raises all boats.
Yeah.
It really does.
Hopefully, the UFC kind of takes a page from what I've seen and does the weight thing.
I would love it.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they force them into that. But
they're trying to figure out what to do about weight cutting. I mean, they really are. They're trying to figure it out. And I brought to their attention the 1FC plan, how the 1FC does it. They basically eliminated it. Everybody goes up a weight. You know, they moved every champion up a weight class. They do hydration tests. They find out what your actual weight is, and they don't let you fuck around. And you fight at what you really weigh. I mean, that's really what it should be. And if you need to be in a lighter weight class, guess what, fat boy? Time to fucking get on a bike. You gotta lose some weight. Lose some actual
next
weight.
Year, do it again next year. Try again next year. Yeah. I love that. Like, at the beginning of the year, this is what you're going to weigh and fight at for the year. Mm-hmm. Stay here.
Yeah.
If you don't like it next year, fucking get another weight class.
That's right. All right, dude. We just did 3 hours.
Damn.
Crazy. Time flies by.
You see how that is?
We finally did it.
We finally did. I'm sitting here thinking I'll be on here for like 30 minutes.
No, 15
minutes.
And let's do it again, man. We'll
yeah,
do it
I'm
again
down,
sometime.
Man. Listen, I'm
and
down.
Give everybody your social media addresses.
At Dean Thomas. At D-I-N Thomas.
D-I-N yeah. Thomas.
Or go to me at all. Or at TrainBJJ Online.
Okay.
Yeah, so those are my two social media.
It's Dean Thomas on
Instagram,
Twitter,
Facebook, all of
everything.
That.
All right. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you, brother.
Yeah, man, holla at me.
Appreciate it, man.
My pleasure, man.
It was fun. All right, folks. See you soon. Bye.